This is the MLWRadio.com Network.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Striga, as always joined by Dylan. And Dylan, today is the day of our big year-end awards show. How excited are you?
Striga, I am so, so excited for this. I'm so fired up. We've got all kinds of awards. As always, I said this online, on Twitter, I think some of my Patreon shows as well that I've been doing, but the greatest thing about this show in particular, because there's a lot of places that are going to hit you guys and all the listeners out there, I'm sure that we're not the only show you listen to, but if you listen to some of the other ones, you'll see a lot of awards they'll hit you with, and it's the same old type of deal for the most part, always the big companies. Our show's special because our listeners are so awesome, and I know it for a fact because we've calculated the awards. And, there's been so many different promotions represented, and to me, I'm extremely confident that our show is going to be the one that has the widest amount of representation in Japanese pro wrestling by a landslide. And that's the part that always makes me so excited because I get to see how great the fans are. As much as just me and you, and obviously our guest on today's show.
Exactly, Dylan. Great point on your part. You briefly heard her voice. We got a guest for this show, and this guest has been around for a lot of shows in Japanese pro wrestling in 2022 because she lives in Tokyo. And much like you said, Dylan, where else would you hear somebody talk about the Grace Project, for example? We just talked about it off the air. So welcome to the Eastern Lariat. First time here on this show and the second time only on a podcast altogether. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, nice to be on here. Thank you for inviting me. I'm so excited to talk about everything with you guys.
So if people don't know you, maybe they'll know you when I tell them your Twitter handle. That's at Purezo Aikawa. And could you tell us what exactly your Twitter handle stands for, the Aikawa part mostly?
Okay, well, basically, Aikawa just means like English conversation. So like in Japan, when we're advertising English lessons, for example, we might say something like, for example, business Aikawa. So like English conversation for business or something like that. So Pro Wrestling Aikawa is basically English conversation for pro wrestling. And I originally called it that after my blog because like when I do my show reports on my blog, which I haven't done for a while because of reasons, but when I do my show reports on my blog, I try to write them in Japanese and in English. Yeah, so that was part of the reason why I chose that for my Twitter handle. It's kind of a pain to like tell people it sometimes because everyone spells it wrong. But yeah, that's me.
That is you. The blog obviously is on Ameblo. It's Cat Bear Mouse.
That is right, yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, you also do conversations for your job in Japan, right?
Yeah. Like, I'm actually an English conversation teacher. So I teach basically like all ages and like all different types of English lessons. So I do like everything from like group lessons with kindergarten students up to like, you know, private business, like very serious type lessons. And everything in between that. So, like, you know, my job is, you know, it's a lot of variety in there. And it can be pretty tough sometimes. But as jobs go, it's not so bad, really.
And also moonlighting as a professional wrestling fan, I would say. Because I always see you going to as many shows as you can go to. And not only that, absolutely. But you also did commentary this year.
Yeah, well, actually, I haven't done any commentary this year. I mean, like, the last time I did commentary was the last time FMWE did, like, one of their shows. Like, so, yeah, when FMWE started up, they were trying to do, like, as much, like, streaming, like, worldwide as possible. So they called me in to do some commentary for a few of their shows. Unfortunately, they haven't done so much in the way of streaming everything this time around. So I haven't really done a lot in the way of commentary this year, but I'm really hoping I get booked in 2023. Fingers crossed, eh?
Fingers crossed, yes, yes. How was that, actually? What was the experience like?
It was amazing. I mean, like, even just the way that they introduced me as a commentator was actually pretty fun, because, like, yeah, so what happened was there was, like, a three-way match. Well, that was supposed to, I think it was Miss Mongol and Nene Mugen Dai. And it was supposed to be a three-way match, but then the third didn't turn up. But Drill Parker, who was doing the commentary for the show up until that point, basically got called into the ring by Miss Mongol going, okay, you're our third. And then Miss Mongol just kind of called out into the audience, like, is there anyone here who can do English commentary? Like, hey, Michelle, how about you? You do it. I was like, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So I ended up doing commentary for that match. And then after that, I was actually given the opportunity to do, like, commentary for another couple of full shows after that, which was nerve-wracking, but I think I learned a lot, you know, like, because, I mean, everybody sucks at everything the first time I try it. So, like,
oh, yeah.
I mean, like, I think, like, I did pretty well considering I was just getting started. Like, and there's a few things that I think I did pretty well. Like, you know, obviously I did all my research and everything and try to make sure everybody knew who everybody was and everything. Like, I just, like, kind of introduced a lot of the wrestlers because a lot of the guys on the card were maybe not familiar faces to people outside of Japan. So I tried to get as much info in there as possible without disrupting the flow of the commentary too much. I was aware that because I was a little bit nervous at times, I kept repeating myself. And like, every time I caught myself doing it, I was just like, ah. So, you know, but I'm totally aware that, you know, I wasn't perfect. But I think considering, you know, I'm so early in my English commentary career. Yeah, you know, I think I did all right. You know, like, yeah, I think, and I had a really fun experience with it. So I hope I get a chance to do more of that in the future and, like, develop my skills and spread the word about, like, you know, Japanese pro wrestling a little bit more.
Yes, absolutely. That would be great. Yeah. Since when have you been living in Japan, and what do you remember what your first show was that you went to?
Oh, gosh, yeah, it was actually a fun story about that. Okay, so I've been living in Japan since 2007. But I actually didn't attend my first Japanese pro wrestling show until 2010. Mainly because, like, I had seen posters, like, on the train for, like, New Japan and stuff like that. But, like, you know, I didn't really know anybody who knew anything about them. And, like, I wasn't sure if it was going to be my kind of thing. So I just ended up not going to those shows. But in 2010, Triple Six were running an all-night show at Shinkiba First Ring.
Yeah.
And my favorite band is Kishidan. Now, you may, like, a lot of pro wrestling fans may know Kishidan just from Yuko Miyamoto's entrance music, One Night Carnival. Yeah, because that's Kishidan's most famous song, essentially. It's a song that everybody always loves at her concerts. It's a, like, everyone does at karaoke, you know.
It's
so that is basically their signature song. And they were at this all night show for Triple Six, basically to officially authorize Miyamoto's use of a song for his entrance music. And that I was like, of course, as a huge Kishidan fangirl, I was like, okay, I've got to go to this. What's a Triple Six? I'm not entirely sure, but hey. And I found out about this on Mixi, which was quite a popular Japanese social networking site back in the day. It's kind of stuck in the past and not many people use it anymore, but, you know, way back when, you know, it was still pretty lively and a lot of wrestlers were using it, including Onryo, who, like, and when I was talking about this, like, event on Mixi community for Kishidan, somehow Unreal found me, and yeah, we ended up like just sort of chatting, and you know, like he took care of my tickets and everything like that. And I turned up to the show. I was just like not knowing what to expect whatsoever. I was just like, I know, I was kind of sad. I was just kind of waiting for Kishidan to come out, but then we started wrestling, and with it being 666, there was all kinds of crazy stuff happening, and I was just having like the best time with it. And I was like, oh my god, is this what Japanese wrestling's like? This is the best! Oh my god! Yeah? And then, like, by the time Kishidan came out, I was just like, you know, I was really hyped just from watching a wrestling. And, like, Kishidan even got in, like, you know, just a little bit involved, like, in it. Well, not in a match, but they at least did a couple of moves and stuff. And then they did the dance to One Night Carnival after giving Miyamoto permission and all that. And I did not have a single damn clue who anybody was there, apart from Unreal, and only because I talked to him on Mixi. And but even though I didn't know who anybody was, I really wanted to know who everybody was, especially from that particular show, because that show had like a whole bunch of DDT guys on it, actually, because DDT and 666 had a really good like working relationship for a while, and you would often get quite a few DDT guys on 666 shows. So they had, like, from who I remember, Makoto Oishi was there, and DJ Nila was there, and a few other guys. And, like, I mean, it was just the craziest and most fun evening I'd had in Japan up to that point. And, you know, from there, I started attending more 666 shows because I had such a good time at the first one. And then I sort of like branched out and started watching wrestlers who had appeared at that show, like in their own shows. So like from there, like I started going to Freedoms because I saw Gentaro and Jun Kasai. I started going to like other places as well. I basically started with like a lot of the smaller companies. I went to my very first death match, like at BJW, because Unreal like told me on Mixi, hey, I have a match in Big Japan. Like, do you want to come and see it? I was like, yeah, okay, because I really liked Unreal. And I didn't do any research whatsoever, just turned up there. Okay, what's this like? Oh my goodness. Oh my god, they're bleeding. Yeah. So, yeah. That was a fun time for everyone. Like Miyuko Miyamoto rolling around in glass. Wasn't expecting that, but hey, that was a fun time too.
Yeah, it was right around the time that he really, yeah, that he really broke out as a deathmatch wrestler, Yuko Miyamoto. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Man.
Just yes. So, yeah.
It sounds like one hell of an experience to just jump into 666 from the get go. Remember when I tried to get the results together for Cage Match back in the day, and I stumbled across gimmicks like Saddam Hussein living dead, and I was just, what the fuck is this?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, I think 666, I don't want to say it's tamer than it used to be, but they're definitely not quite as offensive as they used to be.
Not they are not. No.
They did back in the day, that way they would not touch nowadays, I think, you know, like, whether due to copyright or something else. I mean, I remember like one of my early 666 shows, I nearly had my eyebrows set on fire by the crazy SKB running around with fireworks. K36 came to the rescue. That was nice of him. But yeah, I really hope crazy SKB is doing all right these days, because like, yeah, I don't really, I mean, I know he was sick, and that was part of the reason, I think, why he ended up like leaving 666. But I still don't really know the whole story behind that, if I'm honest.
I think we've talked about that briefly in DMs, and then there's something behind that, definitely. This is kind of going to be the vibe of this show, maybe, talking about 666 here at the beginning of the show.
This is the thing, though, with me, because, I mean, I will always be grateful to 666 to introducing me to pro wrestling, because like, if I hadn't gone to that show in the first place, I mean, God knows if I would have gotten into wrestling at all, in a way, you know, because like, that was like the big thing that got me into pro wrestling, because it's like a lot of pro wrestling fans here do not really talk about being pro wrestling fans. You know, it's like, it's almost like a dirty secret for a lot of people, because like, you I mean, it kind of still has this image of being kind of like a low class form of entertainment, you know? So it's like, it's almost like a game of chicken, like who's going to say it first, you know? And as soon as another person says they like wrestling, it's okay to say it. You like it too, in a way.
Yes, yes. I get that too, because I just never actively went out to tell my students that I was a wrestling fan, but they somehow got a hold of it, and for Christmas they gave me a mug, actually, that reads, "It looks like I'm listening to you, but in reality I'm thinking about wrestling." So now they know, and off we go, I guess.
Excellent.
Yes, so Michelle, we are going to start and jump into these awards, I think, unless Dylan has anything else that he wants to ask you.
Well, I just want to shout out Kishidan, first of all. I'm a big fan of their music. I first discovered them on their intro for Naruto Shippuden.
Nice.
Yes, a big fan of them. I'm sure they did some stuff for some other anime, like probably like Kamen Rider, things like that. Big fan of all of that stuff, and they play a part into it. So that's really how I discover most of my Japanese music, is through anime openings. And
that's a good way to discover it. Yeah, I'm just a little sad because of the news with Kishidan going on hiatus next year, because there's basically Shohei Yanokoshi has some kind of problem with his vocal cords or something, so he's essentially going to take an like indefinite hiatus. Which for Yanokoshi could mean anything from like 6 minutes to 6 years. So yeah, I'm feeling kind of sad about it, and also because they are having their last concert before the hiatus at Nippon Budokan. Good, but also at the same time as DDT's first New Year show, which is bad because I need to go to both. Oh my god.
Oh, sounds like a conflict of interests here. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I've chosen DDT this time, but like, I'm hoping like show will bounce back soon enough and I can go to a Kishidan concert again sometime soon. But yeah, I chose DDT this time. Sorry, guys.
let's hope for that.
Yes.
So I guess we jump into these awards that we have. We had this Google document out, and we assembled all the votes. I tried my best, but Dylan was more comprehensive this time. He worked through everything, so we hope that we got everything completed here. We, for example, one thing that was really difficult was that we got 5 different spellings of the name Julia, which ended up showing up in the statistics, of course. So we had to assemble those to get the true votes for Julia. We also got 4 or 5 different spellings of Dragon Gate, in caps, in low cases, with a slash between DG as
the abbreviation.
Yes, I really can't. The word always is hard for me to say. But thank you, Dylan. Yes, we got that too. And of course, for Moment of the Year, we got so many different takes on the same moment that we had to gather them all. But yes, we'll start at the bottom of our categories. That is always the Best Foreigner Award. And Michelle, much like you, there are lots of foreigners in Japan, not only in the big companies, but for example, recently the Dream Project from Italy also ran a show in Shinkiba, where, for example, the European wrestler Sebastian DeWitt was there. And most recently, one of my favorite guys, underrated guys from Europe, Enda Kara, ended up in Japan wrestling for the promotion of Kengo Takai's promotion. And he also is in Japan. So for a Best Foreigner, Michelle, who do you have?
Well, I've actually really been enjoying Hartley Jackson and Ganpo this year. You know, just because like he seems to have gone on some kind of like emotional journey from like his first participation up to his most recent one, you know, because when he first started out taking part in Ganpro, he was a complete asshole to everyone. And it was actually kind of great fun to watch. But at the same time, some of the stuff he was saying was just like, oh my God, how are you going to get away with that? Like, for example, before his match against Yumihito Imanari for the Spirit of World Gambari Championship, He, oh yeah, Spirit of Gambari World Championship. Get it right, Michelle. But, you know, in the press conference before that, he was saying all kinds of really terrifying stuff, like, I'm going to put you on a hospital bed next to Shinjiro Otani. And I was just like, damn! Oh, my God.
Okay.
I was seriously shocked that he came out with something like that. Like, oh, my God, so disrespectful. Jesus Christ. But at the same time, it added to, like the whole thing about Gunpla is, like, the emotion, you know, and it, like, it's not only about, like, positive emotions and, like, trying your best and, like, putting in that effort every day or anything. It can also be about the negative, angry side, like, the whole, like, nobody appreciates me or, yeah, screw this company, I'm going to beat the shit out of everyone, that kind of thing. And he definitely started out in the latter camp, like, when he first started out and, you know, taking part in Gunpla regularly. And then throughout the year, he just kind of saw, you know, what Gunpla was all about, you know, like the whole, like, family vibe that they got going on, like the fact that everyone keeps supporting each other and keeping each other's head up and pushing each other to do better and things like that. And, like, over the year, you can see him kind of softening up. Well, not softening up, but you can see him starting to understand what Gunpla is all about. And at the most recent show, which happened yesterday, which was an absolute banger, like, everyone needs to see that. Oh my goodness! But, you know, like, he went basically from saying "screw Gunpla and everyone in it" to "I feel like I'm a member of Gunpla's family," you know. And, like, you know, I thought that was just, like, a really a great character development for him within Gunpla. I really loved seeing it. And of course, like, his matches and his performance were all amazing as well, you know. So it wasn't just the storyline stuff going on, but also his in-ring performance and just, like, everything that he did in Gunpla, I think he did amazingly well. And I really hope a lot of people saw that. With it being Gunpla, I can't guarantee that a lot of people saw that, but I hope at least it got more eyes on Hartley Jackson, because I think he deserves it for what he did this year.
I think that's a great pick. I really enjoyed the match that he did with Mitsuki Watase. It was a great match. That really encapsulated the spirit of Gunbari, much like you said, just going all out, trying the best, going hard, and just being the best version of yourself. Yeah. So I get that pick. Do we have two others for your top three?
Let's see. Oof. Let me think. So, I mean, like, I know, I didn't know it was a top three for everyone thing, so, like, I picked one for every category.
Okay, we might as well go with your one, but if you just can think of anyone else, you'll just go with it.
Yeah, I'll go with it. Yeah, it's fine. Don't worry. Thank you.
So I guess we can throw it to Dylan first for his picks. Then we got mine, and then we'll go to the listeners, and maybe you have some opinions on the listeners' picks as well. So, Dylan.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the listeners' picks will be very insightful as well, just for the sheer number of them, for sure. Mm-hmm. For me, I would say for best foreigner, I think that the listeners, when I was going over the results, actually covered nearly everybody I would think of. I will always shout out Jason Lee in Dragon Gate, especially for his early year work, where he was one of the main characters of the promotion, in fact, and things have, you know, he's taken a little bit of a step back the last few months, but had an amazing match, with Jackie and Funky Kamei, Kung Fu Master, started his own little offshoot stable. I thought he had a good year. Diamante, I thought, had a great year at Dragon Gate as well. He's a guy that you look at his tag team with Shun early on, and a lot of his singles work that he's done has really stood out as well. You know, and obviously he ranked high among the listeners, but those guys were kind of not number one, they would be like three and two type of deal. I gotta say, I, you know, not to spoiler alert anybody, but I had to ride with the fans on this one. I went ahead and went with Ospreay here for best foreigner. I think New Japan doesn't have a lot of positives this year, but his title reign, if you look at where the U.S. title was before he got it and to where it's at now, to where it's basically leading into the main match on Wrestle Kingdom. I think that's a big step up from where the U.S. title was not that long ago.
Yeah. Definitely is the true main event of that show, because the main event is ice cold, definitely. Will Ospreay, to be quite honest, I didn't really consider him, not because he hasn't been great. He has been absolutely great. But I didn't consider him because for most of the year, he actually hadn't been wrestling in Japan. He wrestled mainly in the US. I just looked it up. He had like 50 matches in Japan. Whereas, for example, someone like Chris Brooks, he has... That's just the matches that we have listed. He might have wrestled in some bar that we are not aware of course.
Yes.
So we have 120 matches of his listed. And he not only wrestled in DDT, he became tag champ. He's still the Asia Dream tag champion. He also promoted his own show with Drew Parker. And I think that still from 2021, when Dylan, you shouted him out as being improved a lot, Chris Brooks, I think, is my number one foreigner, because just the way that he has found his way into the Japanese wrestling scene, he's basically not a foreigner anymore, but he is an integral part of most shows that he is on. He just recently played Chris Drago at the Michinoku Pro Great Space War.
That was amazing.
So he got that off his bucket list as well. It was an amazing performance as well. So I got Chris Brooks on top of my list. And very close second, actually, is Drew Parker. Drew Parker, I think, is one of the best deathmatch wrestlers in the entire world. And still the King of Freedom's champion. He just beat Jun Kasai at Blood Xmas to retain his title. He has had a great deathmatch with Masashi Takeda as well. Went to the US back and forth to Japan. And just also, much like Chris Brooks, made Japan his home away from home, I would say, much like you.
Yeah, he had an amazing year.
Yeah, he had an amazing year. And Dylan, much like you, I got Diamante on my number three position. It is well aware that I really love the guy, that I think he's an amazing base. You mentioned his tag team with Shun and also his singles work. Just most recently, I think he had the best match of his year with Kota Minoura at Final Gate. Just an amazing performance and an amazing win for him too. Just starting out his singles run, I think. So that are my picks. And when we go to the listeners, we got some picks that got one vote. For example, Alex Windsor in TJPW, Cyrus in All Japan, Francesco Akira. He's going to be at 16 Karat next year, by the way. I'm really excited.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. Jay White and Kenny Omega got one. Max the Impaler also one, and Robbie Eagles and Tom Lawler. But
let me stop you right there. First of all, you want to talk about Ospreay. This guy, Omega, he doesn't even have to wrestle in Japan. he just has to show up on the video.
Hey, we got two more of those. Yes. Yeah.
That's amazing. I'd love to see more of Maxi and Pena over here. I think they're wonderful. I mean, even the first time I saw them in a match, I was just captivated by them. It's really hard to describe the atmosphere around them, but I want more of that. Oh my goodness.
We also got a shout out at Best Rivalry. I think it was Pom Harajuku versus Max the Impaler, his best rivalry.
That was all kinds of fun, yeah.
When we then look at the other votes from the listeners, there's Akari, Timothy Thatcher, Diamante, Drew Parker, and the top three are Zack Sabre Jr., Chris Brooks, and Will Ospreay. Dylan, what do you think about these?
Yeah, you know, I like Brooks. I don't really have anything against him. I actually think he probably took a step back from last year. Not necessarily anything wrong with him. Just he wasn't in the positions this year that he was in the prior year where he was getting title shots and things like that.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I still like him, though. I definitely thought he improved big last year. And he's not only just a wrestler, but like a great ambassador, you know, to the foreign fans and things like that. So I'm a big fan of his. If I were to thumb anybody else, I think Thatcher is definitely like an amazing wrestler, obviously, but I didn't really vote for him just because he didn't wrestle enough in any kind of big moments, you know, at all. You know, I love his tag team work with Hideki, and obviously his match with Kaito was awesome, but I hope he wrestles more, and I think he'll be up there. Big shout out to Akari, too. That would have been my number four if I had to pick anybody. I think she's also a great ambassador for Pure J. Anytime you see her on those shows, she does great. She's always talking to people on Twitter in multiple languages, and I love the fact that we have a Chilean wrestler in Japan. I think that's super cool. I really don't see. There's nobody that really jumps out to me as like a negative. Oh well, Jay, I'd say I think I've made my feelings on him pretty clear over
the
years.
This probably is the worst. Not probably. This is the worst run that the IWGP World Title has seen so far. So I don't have any sympathies for her for voting him either. So no.
Yeah, and Omega, like I said, it's just he has, you know, I get that he's a big star, and him coming back had a ton of buzz. But I do think we should have guys who do wrestle on there. You know, I know you said Ospreay didn't wrestle a lot, but he was in some big moments this year.
He was, yeah.
And stuff. We all have our limits, and, you know, I respect it. I respect you going out with your favorite there. So, another thing, too. Eagles, I think, is somebody we'll talk about for, like, underrated. To me, that's like a guy that I was zoning in on a little bit because he's another one, like kind of like we said about Brooks, where he had last year where he was in these big moments. It's nothing against his wrestling. It's opportunity that wasn't afforded to him, which is unfortunate because I just think the world of his ability. I think he's an awesome performer and somebody everybody should look at. So, yeah, like I said, besides Jay, who everybody knows I don't like, I'm not going to bury him or anything like that right now. most everyone else has done that for the main event so far anyway, but... besides that, though, I think everybody was a good pick here, and you know, like I said, and I even agreed. We start off one for one with me and the listeners picking the same number one.
Nice. A big shout out to Gerardi Trolio for voting Cyrus. It's the one vote that Cyrus got. So great stuff there.
Cyrus respectors assemble right now.
Yeah,
exactly. Any other thoughts on this, Michelle?
Am I going to agree with Dylan about Chris? Like, I mean, Chris has done a lot this year, but I feel like he didn't stand out quite as much as he did last year. Like, I feel like, you know, like, I'm totally with Dylan on this one. Like, I'd like to see him, I'd want to see him push himself a bit more next year is kind of unfair because I think he already pushes himself quite hard.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, I'd like to see him, you know, I'd like to see him at least... having like another shot at something like, you know, maybe another shot at a KOD open weight championship or something like that, you know, but I'd actually really like to see him with that belt one day because I kind of feel like, you know, that would be a kind of an interesting position for him and like I'd like to see what he would do as champion, you know, but right. Even another run, say, with the Extreme Talent Championship or something like that would be incredible, you know, so just. You know, because I feel like he's very creative and I want to see what else he can do.
Yes, I think that's fair. For the next category, we got a runaway winner, actually. Rookie of the Year. Dylan, we'll start off with you.
Yeah, you know, and I thought this is an interesting award. Only because I think this is one of... I think a lot of people in Japan and Japanese wrestling fans, especially maybe in the West, you know, America, English speaking and all that stuff, they might say at the end of it, oh, 2022, it was kind of a down year for Japanese wrestling for multiple companies. You know, not all of them, but maybe, you know, so some companies. We'll talk about it when Best Promotion comes up. Some companies only got like one vote. they were major promotions. But, pretty much anybody will agree that the young guys and the rookies are the lifeblood of Japanese wrestling right now for all the companies, whether it's DDT, Dragon Gate, All Japan, NOAH, even New Japan as well. You know, anywhere you look in the major companies, the rookies have really gone strong. And you see it with the amount of people we had voted overall. But yeah, we did have a big one. For me, though, I have to say there was a lot of great candidates in a bunch of different companies. This one was one of the harder awards, in my opinion. First of all, I will shout out somebody who didn't even get listed, actually, among the voters. That would be Tokyo Joshi Pro's Jiria Nagano. Mm-hmm. I really have appreciated seeing her and her development in Tokyo Joshi Pro. And obviously, she came in with a lot of fanfare, a lot of applause. Love the shoot background she has, and obviously her TikTok game is super strong and got many fans through that way. But I really enjoy her. I think she's going to do some good things. Although she was mentioned here, you know,
twice,
she got
actually, yes,
yeah, yeah, she got two votes here, so I'm shouting her out as well there. For me, I really liked what she brought to the table. Another rookie I'm going to show some love to, for me, I think that, and this is where I kind of agonized over it, because you see somebody like this guy, and obviously the fans disagreed with me on this one, but I really wanted to shout out Fujiwara, but I think me and you, based on our off-air discussion, kind of had the same feeling.
Yes.
That, yeah, he's just not, he left. So I kind of, I didn't want to say disqualified him, but it led me to go to my actual number one pick.
Yeah, I mean, overall. Fujiwara, just to give a little bit of background information for those who don't know, he actually left in June. So he was very high on our half-year awards, obviously. But from there on, he only had three more matches in Japan when he returned briefly for Gate of Destiny and the NOAH Global Dream Corporation. And then he just left again for Mexico. So I didn't consider him either.
Yeah, but I will shout out because he is a spectacular player, you know, in wrestling. But my number one, again, this is where I kind of agonized over it. But then I kind of felt like the things that I've been saying all along are still true in my heart. So I had to go with actually the rookie from All Japan, Ryo Inoue, as my number one.
Same.
I always think that this is kind of where I'm going with this, because we saw Anzai get a lot of support here, and there's nothing wrong with that. Believe me, I love Anzai, future star, and all that. I feel like a lot of times, I made this point, I know you listened to the Dragon Gate show, me and Sandre and Yannick did on the Final Gate on Patreon. That's free for everybody, by the way, so just go to patreon.com/EasternLarry. You'll see it's a really good vibe show as well about Dragon Gate. We talk about all kinds of stuff. But my point on there was, like, it seems like there's always in the classes of the rookies when two guys get, you know, sometimes paired off a little bit, there's that one guy where the company sees them as a star, and they may be great in their own way. But then there's that other guy who I think is, like, the workhorse of the two. And that's the kind of vibe I get. Kind of similar to how in New Japan you've got Shota Umino. It's clear they've got tons of plans for him. Mini Tanahashi, teaming in Muto's match and all that. But I always thought Naruto would be the best worker of the two. And you see somebody like this. I know that Anzai is pegged to be the star. But I really think Inoue is the workhorse. Like, he's a guy that we're going to look at in a couple of years and be like, hey, this guy, he could wrestle anybody, get great matches out of anybody. I love his style. I love his growth. I absolutely love his performance. I think he's honestly one of the highlights of the show already for the most part in All Japan. So I settled with him. I said Inoue was number one.
You can really see it at the Shinkiba shows that All Japan does, where they allow cheering, that he already is one of the most over guys in the company. People got behind him immediately. He adopted these great kick pads. He is now the new kick boy of Japanese pro wrestling. And I really agree with you, Dylan. He will be someone that you can throw in with anybody, that will have a great match with anybody. I get strong Minoru Tanaka vibes of this guy. So I also have him as my number one pick. And he's just amazing.
Yeah. Definitely agree with All Japan rookies, because, like, I mean, say what you want about All Japan, their rookies are always really great. Like, I know All Japan have had, like, kind of a, you know, odd year, but, you know, like, you really can't fault them on the rookies front. My pick for Rookie of the Year is probably kind of an obvious one as a huge DDT fan. Takeshi Masada, like, if I could just say him three times, I probably would.
I actually have him on my number two.
Yeah. He is incredible. Like, I mean, right from his very first match, there was just something very special about him. And it's just like, you know, and DDT is leaning into that super hard, like putting him in more prominent matches. He actually has a singles match against Konosuke Takeshita coming up, which I cannot wait to see. That's going to be really interesting to see what he does there. And, you know, I think you know, 2023 is going to be a very exciting year for him. Like, you know, with, you know, as long as DDT continues to push him consistently, which is, I mean, DDT, you know, its record with pushing certain wrestlers is kind of patchy sometimes. Like, you know, like occasionally, like, guys will, can and will get lost in the mix in DDT, and it's kind of a sad thing. But, like, you know, if DDT knows what they're doing, they will not do this to Masada, because dude's just incredible. You know, they need to strap rockets to him, like, immediately.
Yes.
You know, just, I love watching him. He's just, because he can only get better, which is, you know, and he's already doing really bloody well. Yeah, so imagining what he's going to be like over the next couple of years is just a really exciting prospect for me. Like, I literally cannot wait to see what he does.
Absolutely, yeah, agreed. Dylan, who are the other two that you have?
Jiria Nagano and Takuma Fujiwara.
Right. Got them here. So, yes, I agree absolutely with Ryo Inoue. Much like I said, Takeshi Masada, for the same reasons that Michelle mentioned, I have on my number two and my number three. It was really difficult for me to name my number three because there was a bunch of people that I considered, much like you, Dylan. I considered Jiria. I considered Ishin. I also considered Takuma Fujiwara because of his great first half of the year. But then I went with Mochizuki Jr., who immediately after his debut showed his great potential. He has these amazing Brazilian kicks that he does so early in his career. That is one of the main things that I always look out for when a rookie debuts. How is he moving? How is his movement inside the ring? And Mochizuki Jr. is just amazing at that. Much like Masada and Inoue, he will just get better next year. And I'm really looking forward to the eventual second generation stable that will pop up in Dragon Gate after they all turn on the units with Mochizuki Jr., Ishin, Ihashi, and Strong Machine J. That is something that I look forward to in 2023. And one more shout out, because he just debuted on the Gunbare Pro Show that Michelle mentioned, Munetatsu Nakamura.
Yeah.
What an amazing guy. He had his
match. Incredible.
He had his first match. Just like I said, great movement. He had these great drop kicks. He was in there with Shinichiro Tominaga, and he immediately got a lot of offense in. He had this great crossbody off the top rope and the smoothness of the series of half-hatch suplexes that he did was just out of this world. So this guy probably for next year will be a candidate.
Yeah, I mean, like, when I was at that show yesterday, and the guy next to me at the start of his match was just kind of taking a mickey out of Nakamura a little bit, going, psh, how old is this guy, 12? And I was just like, mate, you know. And then, like, as the match went on, this guy suddenly became Nakamura's biggest fan, you know. It was actually really awesome. I really love when I'm watching wrestling and someone around me starts by not thinking so much of someone or just supporting, like, you know, a different wrestler, and by the end of the match they're totally in support of the other guy, and it's like, oh my god, he is amazing. Oh, this is brilliant. Oh my goodness. You know, I was just like, I was actually really happy to see that kind of, you know, switch from that guy, because I was kind of annoyed with him when he came out of a whole, like, making fun of him right away thing. That was kind of harsh. But, you know, I mean, he did so incredibly well, you know. I mean, it's going to be really fun to see what he does next year. Like, I can't wait to see, like, what he does in Gunpro.
Yes, I'm just looking at some other picks that we got here. I'm just going to pick some of those. Oscar Leube, for example, from Germany, of course. I've seen him at the beginning of this year in WXW. He then went back. I think he first went back to the Farley Dojo and then popped up as a ring attendant in Currican Hall. And Oscar just made his debut at the World Tag League Tour and immediately showed great progress there, being paired with not only the Young Lions, but also with his trainer, Bad Luck Fale, and with other veterans. I think Kaito Nagano of Dragon Gate is one more of these great rookies that has shown a lot of progress over this this year that he debuted in. And Katsumasa Yoshida from Big Japan Pro Wrestling. So shout out to Rob here, true Mr. Big Japan, inheriting that gimmick. Who was it? Ito that was Mr. Big Japan? No, it was Yamakawa, of course. That yes, yeah. Inheriting the Mr. Big Japan gimmick from Yamakawa here, Rob. Yoshida wrestles a lot for Tenryu Project as well and gets a lot of shine in that promotion. So he's also one of those great outputs of the Big Japan dojo. And yeah, great picks all over the board, I guess, from the listeners.
Yeah.
I just think that, you know, I love Masada. I totally agree with you guys shouting him out. I would put guys like him, I think Anzai too, in All Japan. Nagano, I kind of said this in the Dragon Gate show. He's another one where it's like Ishin is probably going to be the main star of mm-hmm. that, but Nagano is going to be like he's the workhorse of that group. He's going to be the guy in a year or two that's doing amazing things in the ring, and everyone looks forward to all of his matches, I feel like. So, like, there's a lot of guys for here that were listed here that's still going to be eligible next year. So, you know, right. with the rules being how they are. But, yeah, you know, again, I really have no problem with any of these picks, to be honest. I think all of them are pretty solid. Big shout out to Kaho Matsushita getting love.
Mm-hmm. She's great, yeah.
Yeah, on there. You know, I thought maybe Yuki Arai might get a little bit more votes, but, you know, that's okay. You know, I agree with the voters pretty much. Fujiwara was the main guy. Overall, like, he won the voting, but, you know, like, we pretty much made our point on that. But a lot of people, he stood out so to everybody so much that he's kind of the one I think the Dragon Gate fans have kind of latched on to as the future guy, so to speak. So, and he's a super talented guy. I have no problem with that at all.
I'm looking forward to the next category because, Michelle, this is always the best category for Dylan. Sometimes he rages in this category because...
Excellent.
Because, I mean, I put it into the format that we put out on the Google Doc. What the most underrated actually means? Did I put it in the format? I think I did. Let me see.
Uh oh.
I didn't put it on the format actually this time. Maybe that's my fault. Yeah, maybe that's my fault. So, okay. Most underrated, Dylan. This is actually a yearly Eastern Lariat Christmas tradition. Dylan sits down, has a cup of eggnog, and just tells the kids what most underrated actually means.
Okay, yeah, first of all, absolutely not on the eggnog. I hugely reject that idea overall. But underrated, I wouldn't say I've more grown to be amused by by this award more than raging on it. I would say just because it's so, you know, so many people. I think, and it's the one to blame is clearly Dave Meltzer for all of this, for his awards, putting most underrated and confusing it with most underpush when that was apropos in the 80s when he started, but it just never changed. And now people have this strange version of underrated, and especially on this one, the only one that gave me a little bit of an eye twitch was when someone voted for Micah and specifically put under pushed on there, and I think they did that just to
spite you.
Yes, but the problem is that I also think Micah would be a good pick in the actual definition of underrated as well, and that she doesn't get talked about as much because some of these guys. And I think this is another issue with these awards somewhat. It's not really an issue, but it's just like there's some guys who maybe are underrated only because they're not talked about enough. Not necessarily that they're like, oh, you know, like for example, oh, Shigehiro Irie. Nobody goes to him and says, oh, he sucks. Nobody underrates him, really. It's just if you don't know him. But that's still a valid way to say underrated.
In years past, we sometimes had, for example, Takuya Nomura win the award, but nobody ever thought that he was bad. And everybody raved about him, and he was never underrated. He just didn't win the big one in Big Japan for a long, long time. And that is the definition that Dylan just gave of underpushed.
And even that one, I think in that particular case, I never thought he was underpushed because he was so integral to the tag team scene.
That's right.
Overall, you know, and you know, you see some of these people on here, and it's an amazing list of candidates we have here.
Yes.
In fact, this is the one where we had an 8-way tie for first place.
Wait. Oh my goodness.
This was the widest ranged category of them all. We even got Chad Gable on the list, who I think is he on the Raw roster? I don't know.
That's right.
Definitely Raw did not wrestle in Japan, but he is in good company with Kenny Omega, I think.
And he is very underrated. If I were to make an American yes. awards, that would be a great pick. It just maybe a little out of place in this particular one. But I warned everybody. You can't say I didn't warn them on the show. I told them, hey, don't put American guys on there. Striga may get mad at you.
No, much like you, I'm more amused by that now.
And Chad Gable's a good pick as well. If it was somebody lame, I would have been against it. But regardless, for me, my pick, the top three. Number three for me was somebody who did not get listed at all, which I think that definitely – that if you don't get listed, I think that actually improves your category because then you're just not rated. So, yeah, you have to be underrated overall. But I picked Daiki Inaba from Noah as my number three.
Yes.
This guy never gets any love from anybody, and he's actually, like, a good worker. You know, the problem is he's another one that never gets pushed or anything like that in Noah. He's always in the second match, it feels like. They did a little bit with him at the very beginning where they had him feud with Mara Fuji and led to some really good stuff over that month and had his little team with Kaito for a very brief period. I really like him a lot. I've always liked him, even in Wrestle 1. I thought he never got the credit he deserved. He was always overlooked for others. Yeah. So, big fan of Inaba. I think he's truly, like, in every sense of the word, whatever definition you come up with, he is an underrated character in Japanese wrestling. Number two to me is underrated in a literal sense almost, because I think that a lot of people had this strange negative perception of this person that I couldn't quite get, wrap my head around. But I think that's starting to end. I think that she will not be a candidate for this in next year. But I have to really respect Miracle Passion, Nanai Takahashi. I really think that people were down on her when she came into Stardom. And I can't understand why. I thought her match with Shuri was so great. I thought her team with you is freaking awesome. They totally deserve to win the tournament, as I correctly predicted, along with my many other tournament predictions that I made correctly this year.
Tournament projector.
And Nostradamus got left in the dust this year on Eastern Lyria. It's like he's so far behind, it's crazy. When it comes to Japanese wrestling, I approved everyone. All of my doubters are in the mud once again. And Takahashi has really proved herself. And I think, like I said, a lot of people aren't going to do that anymore. But she did have a negative spin on her from a lot of people. But my number one was actually somebody who was one of the 8-way tie members on here. And it had to be Yu Iizuka from Great Gliat, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
he to me is a guy that last year he was the guy that everybody was popping for with a lot of UWF style matches, a lot of great moments, even in Hard Hit and Heat Up and in Great. He was doing so many good things, having great rivalries. And now, like, this year, he's been so far behind the eight ball. It's like nobody even talks about him anymore, even when it comes to the people on the roster, even the young guys, even the homegrowns, quote-unquote. He's always left behind. His most notable moment was losing in 30 seconds, this whole year. And I think he deserves so much more because I think his talent level is way high. He to me, is one of the better overall wrestlers in Japan, just in-ring. You could look at character-wise and push and all that stuff. But he's a guy that doesn't get the love he deserves, even among the fans of the company. So I went with you, Iizuka, as my number one.
Yeah, hard agree. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I can get behind you, Iizuka. I still though think that nobody really thinks that he's bad, but just he's not talked about a lot. And that is definitely also part of this category. So, Michelle, who do you have in this one?
Well, honestly, there are entire promotions I could put under underrated here. Okay, let's go for so GAMPRO, for example. It's like, it's right there. It's super easy for people to watch. It's basically right there on the same bloody website as Noah and DDT and Tokyo Joshi Pro. It's not like it's hard to access or anything like that. And people are always like, whenever there's news about absolute bangers happening in GAMPRO, which happens on a somewhat regular basis. I mean, come on, it's GAMPRO.
Right.
And it's like, we're doing, like, we are consistently good. You know, like, I have not, I've never been to a GAMPRO show that has fallen flat or anything like that. Like, I mean, I know what I'm getting when I'm going to a GAMPRO show or when I'm watching one on Wrestle Universe. I know it's always going to be really good. And people are always going, oh, yeah, I should watch more GAMPRO. And then they bloody don't. You know, and it's just, you guys, come on, give them their flowers already. You know, they're doing so well. You know, it's like, it's so much amazing wrestling happening in GAMPRO. And just, you know, even when they're having, like, their big shows, like, you know, the one they had yesterday at Korakuen and, like, Wrestle Sekigahara, people talk for maybe about that for maybe, you know, in internet time, about 2 minutes, and then they go back to forgetting about them again for the next 6 months. You know, it's just like, guys, really, you know, like, show them a bit of respect at least. I mean, like, and that kind of brings me to, like, an underrated wrestler. I mean, like, until very recently, I mean, until yesterday, basically, you know, Mizuki Watase had never had, like, you know, a major singles belt to himself, you know, and, like, I was so proud. Oh, by the way, spoilers, but yeah. I feel like he's done a lot of really amazing stuff this year. He's also been taking part in Tenryu Project on the regular and stuff like that. You know, he's done a lot of different things this year, and I feel like more people should be talking about him, and they just don't for whatever reason. Yeah. And, like, I feel like, you know, definitely him moving from DDT to GAMPRO was the correct decision because he, like, you know...
It was,
like,
a very bold move to just go basically to the indies.
Yeah, I mean, right move for him. Yeah, because, like, I mean, I mentioned this about DDT. As much as I love DDT, like, you know, they do, and they have a very big, we have quite a large roster, you know, which is good in a way because allows for a lot of variety and flexibility in our matches. And, like, you know, you're never going to get bored, basically. You're not going to see, like, a lot of the same matchups. I mean, you probably will, like, you know, if it's a popular matchup, they'll probably do that a few times. But there's a lot more things that they can do, like, with such a big roster. But it also means that you get a lot of guys who basically sort of get stuck sort of in the middle. Like, nobody thinks they're terrible wrestlers, and in fact, like, a lot of them are very good wrestlers, but they just kind of can't get to the top for whatever reason. And it's not always because of ability or whatever, like, it's just, like, because either because they're not getting pushed or because they're just not standing out in a certain way. And I think Watase's been very, very good for years. Like, he's had some really amazing matches. Like, even going as far back as his DNA days, he was having these, like, incredible singles matches against, like, some absolute legends. And even
his match
then,
with Hikaru Sato this year.
Yeah, like, and it's just like he was just nobody. Like, he was doing so many amazing things, and, like, just somehow it just flew under everybody's radar. You know, it's just like, it's a complete injustice to the guy. I'm hoping that, you know, now that he has, like, a title, you know, like, I'm so proud of him for getting that belt. I mean, that was, like, it was an incredible match last night. I'm just hoping that 2023 is going to be his year. Like, you know, that more, he's going to get more eyes on him, and people are going to appreciate what he does more than they do now, because it's just, I mean, and it's like with a lot of people on GAMPRO, it's just like the talent is there, the ability is there, you know, the character is, the heart is there. Like, they've got all the ingredients to, like, be, like, you know, the promotion that everyone talks about, and then it just somehow doesn't happen, you know, and it is a goddamn mystery to me sometimes, you know. So I don't know. I remember feeling very salty at Cyber Fight Festival when GAMPRO basically didn't even get their own match. Like, they basically had GAMPRO versus Eruption, which wasn't a bad match at all, but they had their own match, like, the year before. So, you know, what was to stop them having their own match again this year? You know, it was kind of unfair. Even Cyberfighter sleeping on GamPro. I mean, come on, you guys.
Oh, but it produced a great moment when they kidnapped Kenoka.
That was great. Yeah. I mean, that was one of my favorite things about it. But, you know, like, I mean, basically anything involving Kenoka is brilliant, you know. So, yeah. But I just kind of hope that, you know, more people do start to, like, watch GamPro on the regular, because I feel like they deserve to be watched more, you know. And it's just, it's kind of baffling that they don't get talked about. And it's like, in a way, that is kind of GamPro style in a way, because they are, you know, despite being part of Cyberfight, they are basically considered, you know, indies, you know, but they can still keep that style and they can keep that spirit, but still get talked about more than they are now.
Yes, I can definitely understand the vote for Ganbare as a whole and Mitsuki Watase as an individual. As I'm just looking at the match announcement for his first defense, he's going to face Tyson Maeguchi. He's also one of these guys that made a name for himself in Ganbare Pro. So Ganbare is a great choice as a promotion.
There's actually a thing about Tyson Maeguchi, by the way. Just a little tidbit from yesterday's show. So you know Tyson Maeguchi is part of like Ibushi Pro Wrestling Research Institute, yeah? Guess who was hanging out at the sidelines at yesterday's GamPro?
Ah, I see.
He was just, I mean, he was wearing a mask, but, like, you know, it was definitely him, though. Like, you know, Ibushi was definitely there. You know, I'm just kind of curious, like, you know, I mean, like, because there was, like, part of me that was kind of hoping he was going to run out and challenge Watase for the championship or something like that. Like, because that would be so on brand for him, but... And, you know, it was just kind of nice that he was there in a way, you know, because it was just, you know, because me and the dude next to me, we were just like, is that him? It looks like him. You know, and we were kind of second guessing ourselves, like, now what's he doing here? Why? You know, because like, Maeguchi wasn't even there yesterday. So like, I mean, I'm just kind of, yeah, 2023 is going to be an interesting year for GamPro. I can feel it. It's going to be a good one.
We'll see that. You mentioned Tenryu Project with Mitsuki Watase as well. And I want to give a shout out to one of those wrestlers that got a big spot once Tenryu Project returned. And I was so happy that he got to do that. He had amazing matches with Hikaru Sato this year. Keita Yano, I think.
Yes.
Such an underrated guy. Because for the most part of his career, he's been just wrestling on these tiny indie shows. And he is just a sentimental favorite of a lot of indie wrestling fans in Japan. But even for them, for a lot of the last years, he disappeared because he didn't really do big indie shows. But now he's back with Tenryu Project. Great guy. I love him very much. And Dylan also always mentions Hikaru Sato. I mentioned him here in my honorable mentions as well, because he always tends to be forgotten about. So I can definitely see where Dylan, where you're coming from in your choices. And one more honorable mention, one more shout out I want to give. I don't want to put him on top of my list because I think most people really are aware that he's very good. But I think that there is a case to be made for Jun Kasai as well. He has produced two great matches that you could call match of the year this year, but I still don't think that the perception of him is that he is really not only a deathmatch guy, but he is such a creative and intelligent pro wrestler that he's able to produce these kinds of matches. But for my top three, I want to start out with someone that I also mentioned in my half year awards and who is still one of those guys that gets forgotten about, much due to the fact that Big Japan is mostly forgotten about. You could also mention Big Japan, for example, as underrated in this category. Hideyoshi Kamitani, in my opinion, is one of those that is underrated. He is the current deathmatch champion, so he's definitely not under-pushed, but I don't think that he gets talked about a lot. And even now that he's facing Yuji Kobayashi for the Strong World title, I don't think that many observers really think that he's actually winning the title. So he not only is a deathmatch champion, but he is in this grueling Saikyo Tag League that has been going since September and is still not finished in late December. He is in this tournament with two different tag teams. So this guy is an absolute workhorse, and I love Kamitani for that. For my number two, I went to Stardom, and I went to one of my, also my sentimental favorites, I would say, in the company. Dylan mentioned Micah. I will mention Saya Ida. I didn't watch all of the five-star Grand Prix matches, but I made sure to watch most of Saya Ida's matches, and I mostly came out really liking most of them, especially the one with Starlight Kid. I just don't think that she ever got the recognition she deserves in Stardom. You can see it in her cage match total rating that now more fans are aware of how great she is, because her current total rating this year has risen from years past. So I think the awareness is there. But my most underrated actually is from Michinoku Pro Wrestling. For the most part of the last 2 years, Musashi carried the company as the Tohoku Junior Heavyweight Champion. And in the moment that Fujita Junior Hayato returned, in a great, great way, obviously, so I'm not taking anything away from Hayato's return, but from the moment that Hayato returned, nobody basically talked about Musashi anymore. He had been in great at the beginning of the year. But since the return in July, he basically had been relegated back to the mid-card positions. So I think that the guy deserves much more to be talked about, and I consider him here in this category as underrated.
Yeah,
a former ELW veteran on my old Twitch channel on Fire Pro. He was one of my guys on there. So I'm actually a big fan of his. Honestly, anybody in Impro is probably going to be underrated.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like just because they don't get a lot of shine these days, or even opportunities.
He's actually the tag champ right now with Katsuki Hashimoto, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's a great pick, honestly. The only thing I'll say is I like how you like labeled me as saying Hikaru Sato, even though I actually didn't say him at all this time.
The first time ever, actually, yes.
Yes, like I said, you just naturally just went on there, even though I said Inaba.
Yes, yes.
And talk about underrated. Like, you're trying to wipe him out of my own honorable mentions right now. So clearly, I think I might have to upgrade him at this point.
Yeah, I mean, another promotion in a way that I'd like to kind of put out there as being kind of underrated, just because of their perception on social media, basically, or in a way, and because of their perception on social media. I almost kind of want to put DDT on that list as well, simply because with Konosuke Takeshita being signed to DDT and AEW now, a lot of people, I think it's a really incredible thing for a start. I think it's really great that Konosuke is getting so much recognition for his talents. He certainly deserves everything that's come, all the good things that's coming his way. And I think it's really great that he's getting more eyes on him too. But it's like, you know, there seems to be this kind of thing like on Twitter where it's just like, okay, so there's Takeshita who just seemingly came out of nowhere. You know, it's just like, guys, you know, do you have any idea what a DDT is at all? I mean, and it's like, you know, it's a certain group of, like, subgroup of fans on Twitter who basically act like, you know, DDT is nothing now because Takeshita is part of AEW. And it's just like, wait a minute, you guys. There are so many talented wrestlers in DDT. It's not only Takeshita. Of course, he's one of our top guys, but there's so much talent in DDT, which, you know, a lot of Takeshita's, like, newer fans, I think, either are just completely unaware of or just not interested in for whatever reason. But it's just, you know, I mean, like, I kind of feel like, you know, a lot of people are kind of down on DDT because they think Takeshita's left or something. I keep saying, you know, Takeshita's moved to AEW. And it's just like, no, he's in AEW and DDT. He's coming back to DDT occasionally. But, like, I don't know if I'm really expressing this right, you know, but it's kind of like, there are a lot of guys in DDT who at least deserve as much recognition as Takeshita gets, you know, and I kind of hope, you know, again, I want more eyes on DDT next year because there's a lot of talent there. Like, you know, isn't getting, well, it's not that they're not getting talked about, but are not getting talked about as much as they deserve to be. You know, so I kind of feel like people have been a bit quiet about like what DDT has been doing this year.
Let's see if you can shed more light on DDT with the next category, Michelle. We got most improved.
Yukio Naya. Right there. Okay, because I think a really big part of that is he's a lot more confident now. Like, you know, like, I mean, his first year or two on DDT, he seemed kind of unsure of himself and like just kind of there for the most part, like not necessarily doing badly, but not doing anything like that makes him stand out. But like, if you look at his output, like especially from this year, he's gone from strength to strength, you know, like, and I feel like DDT's noticing that in him as well. And are kind of investing more in him in terms of, of course, like, it got his new entrance music, it got his new costume and everything, which looks amazing. I love his new costume. But like, I just think he's had a very good year this year. I was kind of sad that he didn't get all the way to the KOD Openweight Championship, but I feel like it's not that far out of his grasp. Like, I feel like it's something he could realistically achieve within the next year or so. You know, because like, he just carries himself so much better than he did. Like, he looks stronger. I mean, he's always been a kind of big dude, you know, and although, like, obviously he's lost weight since he joined, but like, he looks a lot stronger than he did, you know, if that makes sense. You know, like, you know, just everything about him has leveled up, like from the way he presents himself to the way DDT presents him as a wrestler. Like, I think it's all just, you know, it's all just added to his general aura. And like, I feel like if they continue to invest in him, I think it's going to be a really good thing. You know, I'd really love to see him in more high profile matches in the next year. I just can't get enough of him right now.
Dylan, how about you?
When it comes to most improved, again, we had a lot of good candidates. This was more of a normal balance, so to speak, from the listeners. Although the winner was pretty clear when you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I think that, you know, there was one guy that I thought definitely took a huge step forward. There was a lot of people I thought actually made good improvements this year. I think they're a little bit unheralded. Again, I think what Michelle was saying about DDT is somewhat true, not just about them, but I think a lot of Japanese wrestling as a whole in general. I think a lot of people have had a little bit of a negative slant looking at it this year in general. Mm. But I think if you look deeper into it, you see a lot of people that have made good strides forward. But for me, I picked my two honorable mentions or whatever, my three and two. I thought that I got to go with Stardom for my number three, Hanan. Her future of Stardom title run has been really good. She's become a super reliable opening match performer and somebody who before was very young, obviously. She's still very young, obviously, but still like super green and not really a special performer at all. But this year, they've really done an excellent job of featuring her in that division and also in certain tag matches throughout the year and big moments that they've strategically placed her in. And I think she's done a great job in all of them, well above her experience level and age, obviously. So I wanted to shout her out. Rising Hayato, that's a guy I think that has really improved. Even just over the course of the year, you look at him from where he was at in January to where he's at now, and I think he's grown by leaps and bounds. Like, and all throughout the year, considerably, I think he's, you know, you could point to him from January, but then point to him in May. He had that big tag match. You know, he's had a lot of good matches overall. And now he feels like a guy who he could be a cornerstone of that division and a generational rival to Atsuki in that All Japan Junior Heavyweight division. I think he's a guy that was an indie dude for a long time, or not super long time, but a few years, and then came to All Japan and is really like he really belongs, I feel like. And with his new gimmick, I think that's opened up another side of him. I think everyone will always point to his athletic ability, but I remember saying this, him as an all-around wrestler, I think, is kind of underrated in the improvements he's made, the way he sells, the way that he moves around the ring. You were mentioning that earlier. I think he's a guy that has a lot of that to him. But still, the one that made the step forward, in my opinion, the biggest one, was pretty clear. This wasn't a super hard award for me. It's the same as I said on the half-year awards. I think you compare where Shun Skywalker was at the end of last year, like before that mask angle, to where he's at now, I think it's night and day. I think he's really become one of the best overall performers in Japan in any company. And his character work especially, I think, has really, really improved. You know, if you look at him as a character, when he was really throughout his entire babyface run, to where he... And almost it was like a switch was flipped, because right away he was among the most entertaining guys. You know, from January, it's different than Hayato. It was like, you know, from November to last year to January of this year, everything was changed, and he's already one of the best characters.
I remember that even in last year's year-end awards, he immediately won this category of most charismatic, even though he only had switched his gimmick 3 or 4 weeks before our awards.
Yeah. And it shows you the big change that he went through. And to me, so this was an easy award. I like, he's the one that my opinion of has totally grown by leaps and downs. I think he's one of the top players in Dragon Gate. And in terms of character work, I think he's one of the best in any company, honestly. Like, not even just in Japan. I think he's among the best in terms of charisma, character. He just gets it in this heel role. And I think he's a guy that's done a lot of great things. And I certainly expect him to do more great things in 2023.
Yes, I can see Shun Skywalker. He's to me in a similar range as, for example, Yukio Naya, where they have both been very good at the half-year point already, that I did not sense this incredible step up from where they were. But I definitely have Yukio Naya, because I think there was a step up. But yeah, he already took this big step at the beginning of this year. I have him on my number three. For my honorable mentions, I want to shout out three. First, I know that you talked about him on your recent show, Dylan, with Sandra and with Yannick. Yannick, I think, specifically mentioned Minorita. He made the gimmick work. I also didn't like the gimmick at first, but now I can see what the Minorita gimmick really stands for. Obviously, the new Brave Gate champion as well, so he's getting recognition for that. Ryukyu Honda, in my opinion, is a similar position to Yukio Naya, whereas the confidence level has risen so much. He always was a very good wrestler, obviously training in the Wrestle One dojo. But the confidence that he has now has led to him being improved, as he carries himself much stronger than he used to.
And
the same goes for TJPW's Yuki Arai. I think her tag title run with Yuki with Saki Akai has brought out her, not her full potential, but has brought out a different edge to her character, and has also given her more confidence. And confidence was one of the key issues for my number two. And man, Dylan, you said about Shun Skywalker, a flip was switched, but the real flip, in my opinion, was switched with Benkei at the end of the year, when he turned from a high-end to gold class. He not only made gold class work, which was a lame duck of a stable, much like high-end was, and he had this great renovation of his character, which even led him to challenging for the Dreamgate title against Yuki Yoshioka. His whole cheeky-cheeky gimmick, he's so charismatic with that as well. Great improvement, and he's finally back where he really should have been all along. But then I figured there is this one guy that also got his switch flipped when he joined Natural Vibes. And that's my number one position. It's Strong Machine J. I never understood the guy. I didn't get him. I didn't get his vibe. I couldn't get behind the Strong Machine idea. He had this weird run right at the beginning of his career with a triangle title run with Gamma and with Don Fuji, I think it was with. He only had these Triangle Gate matches, didn't really do a lot except for that. But since he joined Natural Vibes, also, I think that he not only showed us that he is a great dancer, but he also showed us that he's a great character worker, which he, in my opinion, never did before. So, yeah, that's my top three.
Great.
Yeah, when we go to the listeners' top three, there was a tie on number two with Yukio Naya and with Yuki Yoshioka. And I can definitely see that Yuki Yoshioka also is one of those that gets most improved, because he was nowhere near the guy that he is now at the end of the year. He has this amazing title run with the Dreamgate Championship. And at the beginning of the year, he was still trying to figure out his role within Dragon Gate after he took off his mask Dire Inferno. Yes, yeah. Right. But the number one most improved, Dylan, I think you've seen more of her in Stardom this year than I have. It's Mina Shirakawa.
Yeah, you know, I think that when it comes to Yoshioka, I always really believed in him. I was a big fan of his. I even said he was going to be the guy, you know, even when he was still Dire Inferno. A lot of people really thought it would be Dragon Dire, and things worked out to where he, like, that was potential last year, and then he totally lived up to the potential this year. So I definitely agree with him. Like, he took a huge step forward after losing the mask. Shirakawa, I think that her step forward was really in the 5-star Grand Prix. And by the end of it, I was really enjoying a lot of her matches. Ever since she had her match with Mirai, she showed this different technical side of her that really hadn't been showcased at all in her prior run. I think she always was great in terms of charisma and character and the way that she carries herself as a star. I thought she always had that. But overall, as a wrestler, I think she really took a step forward. And she did improve last year as well. I think you could have made a good case for her as well. I think after the 5-star, she really improved, and her match with Tal Saya for the white belt, the promo afterwards she cut became kind of a viral deal, and it was an amazing promo on top of it, you know, with her mouth just totally shattered and bloody and everything else. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I do think that she was already kind of good going into the year, but I definitely think she took a step forward at a certain point in the year and has really grown to be one of the girls that you really look forward to in 2023. What's she going to do? I think that, yeah, I could get down with this vote for the people.
Yeah. So I think that covers it for most improved. I'm just looking at some of the other votes. Someone voted for Katsu Sada Higuchi, specifically mentioning went from very good to one of the best in the world. I actually don't think that he put that he had that much of a step forward, but I get the idea of that.
Yeah, he's not better, but he was already amazing to start with.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's some guys in this award we see that over the years where it's, hey, did they improve or did they get more opportunities?
Yeah. For example, Madoka Kikuta as well returned from injury and immediately got these opportunities. Mm-hmm. Jade Cargill is there as well.
That must have been Gerard that voted for her.
I don't know. I'm going to find out. Takuo Kato from Big Japan Pro Wrestling, also very good. Once again, Katsumasa Yoshida, also Big Japan. Hideki Kwatani gets mentioned. Cannon. Straight from his DDT debut was very good. Ami Sorei in Stardom gets mentioned. So lots of shout-outs. We got Yuki Ishida as well. Mm. Arisu Endo is mentioned. So lots of different takes on different wrestlers in this game. Mm. Great stuff.
Yeah. I just have to question the one who voted for Benkei. Like he said, I don't know how you voted for him.
Yeah, we actually do know how.
I mean, he has to at least know how. Like if they voted for him, like right?
Yeah,
you know, I think I'm not hating on the pick because I do think he. Again, he's another one though that, in my opinion, he always was great. Like it's just he never got. He was stuck in this stupid group that sucked, and then he became better at the end of the day, like made the whole group better more than anything. So I guess like what you were saying too about him, charisma-wise and character-wise, I guess you could say has improved. I could get behind it, but I do think we, you know, like you said, I think we do know how, actually.
Yeah, we do actually. It was actually not Gerard that voted for Jade Cargill, so we might as well move forward to the next category. This is for you, Dylan, for you starting out with a best rivalry.
Yeah, this is probably one I think that was one of the harder votes for a lot of people, actually.
Lots of Julia.
Well, yeah, in my multiple views, but yes. Also some people just left this one blank because I think that's one of the things that we've really, like, that's been missing a lot from modern wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is the heated rivalry and stuff like that. I was talking to somebody not that long ago. I forget exactly what the context of it was, but I was saying, for me, when I first started watching, one of my favorite things, especially in Japanese wrestling, was say, and that's the sad thing is that they've had multiple opportunities for this kind of thing to take place, and I think they failed in every single time. But an interpromotional rivalry where the fans are heated and, you know, like you have super pride for your company and they're wanting to show their best and show their fight. And I think like one of the closest we got to that was like it wasn't even a rivalry really. It was just a one match between the Young Lions and All Japan and New Japan in October, which they recognized and put that match up for free on YouTube. But besides that, you've had opportunities. You had New Japan and Noah in January. You've had New Japan and All Japan working together multiple times. You had a DDT and Noah show in Cyber Fight Fest. You've had all kinds of different opportunities for Dragon Gate and Noah work together and multiple times again. And I've never really got the sense that those rivalries have ever taken to the shape that I think they could have and would have in a different time period if they put more effort into them overall.
Yeah.
But yeah, to me, my three, I would say my number three would be Rising Hayato and Atsuki Aoyagi from All Japan. Again, I kind of mentioned it when I was talking about Hayato earlier. I think they have the makings of a generational type of rivalry in the junior division. There's no telling what will happen with somebody going heavyweight or somebody leaving or anything like that. But where they're at right now, they really have that potential, in my opinion. I really had a hard time determining this, and it's clear that, you know, maybe the listeners did as well when it came to best rivalry. But to me, I think the one that everybody would point to would be Natural Vibes and Z-Brats at Dragon Gate, just because they've not just had a good rivalry, but it's lasted a long time.
Yes.
Overall. So
the entire year, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And I think they're in an interesting spot in terms of they have a lot of interesting directions they could go into it with 2023. But overall, for me, it's funny because we're pointing to this, or I'm pointing to this, and to me, we've yet to see the climax. I would be interested to see what the voters would say after this show happens, if they would change it. Because I think the Shuri and Julia rivalry ultimately has led to one of the biggest matches in the company's history and has years of build up to it overall, and they've wrestled this year as well, even before already. So I think it has a lot of ingredients and they've really hyped this show up, and it looks like it's going to be a big deal, this Wrestling Queendom, which I think we all knew it would be anyway. And the payoff to a year-long title reign from Shuri, her former friend winning the title, I wonder if that will turn some heads in multiple categories, actually, I would say. But to me, it's possible that match flops and it's all a horrible thing, but I really don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to be the cherry on top of their rivalry. So I would pick that. With Z-Brats and Vibes, it's clear that that's not ending anytime soon, because they've kind of spun off with Z-Brats and this other unit disband match soon as well. So yeah, I would go with Shuri and Julia as my number one.
I also gave this rivalry my benefit of the doubt, because I clearly expect this match to deliver. I think this show will come out after the climax of this rivalry, actually. So we'll see after this show how this all unfolds. But the build of it definitely points towards this being a great climax. So that's my number one as well. For my number two, I also have a rivalry that I will say could become a great generational rivalry, much like Rising Hayato versus Atsuki Aoyagi, that I have in my honorable mentions. Now, my number two is Mochizuki Jr. versus Ishin, mostly for the great turn that they did with Ishin. First, they had this great tag match with Mochizuki Jr. and his dad against Ishin Ihashi and his dad, Ishin Riki. And then Ishin Riki recommended Ishin to join M3K, which he did. Then he turned on M3K, joined Z-Brats, and now they are rivals. So this was a very well-told story, and it could lead to some big things in 2023. And also, Yeah, Dragon Gate is just a company that tells great stories. So my number three is Natural Vibes versus Zebrats. You mentioned, Dylan, that is this rivalry has not ended yet. It will definitely culminate in a great ending. I'm very sure about that. It has been a rivalry throughout the entire year that got picked up once again in early December with the title changes of the Twin Gate. And it has always been brewing. They had this great singles match between Shun Skywalker and KZ in the main event of this recent Kurrikan Hall show for Dragon Gate as well. So lots of great stuff in this rivalry. And one more thing I want to shout out. New Japan really has trouble creating these kinds of rivalries. You could always, of course, point to like Okada versus Naito at the beginning of the year. One thing that I think I would classify as a rivalry because it was part of Okada's road to the IWGP World Heavyweight title was his rivalry with Jonah. It was not a very long rivalry, but it put Jonah over huge because he beat the big champion guy. And it is very unfortunate that Jonah isn't in New Japan anymore because they could have done great rematches with these two as well. And the fans totally got behind this rivalry and they totally got behind Jonah defeating Okada that it led to a great culmination at Declaration of Power in October.
I'm sorry, Strig, I only know him as Bronson Reed. I don't know who this Jonah guy is.
Oh, yeah, the sidekick of The Miz, I know, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's a top-tier bodyguard that yeah. We have here.
That's all he is, right?
But no, like he's... He really, those were great matches. That was one of the more memorable matches of the G1 was Okada and Jonah. I've waxed poetic on Okada's year. I think he's improved, not necessarily in talent, but like, I feel like effort overall. somebody who's really brought his A game throughout the year and is like, he's become in a zone that is rarely in consistently. Obviously, you have those top great matches you can point to, but I think this year has been one of his best years overall, and that was a great thing with both of them. I think the G1 match is actually a lot better than the October match personally, and obviously that was helped by the Shock win and everything like that, but that was a memorable match, one of the more memorable ones of the entire year really in New Japan.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah. That we have, and Michelle, what's about your rivalry?
Well, I agree, but it's been kind of difficult to really single out a particular rivalry, like from this year in particular. But I mean, of course, as a DDT fan, there are lots of rivalries that I really like in DDT, but a lot of DDT's best rivalries tend to be for ones that last for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. Or like they got some kind of historical context, or they got, some kind of context related to their units, like, oh, these guys used to be in the same unit and now they hate each other. Or these guys have been friends for a long time, but they still like to kick each other's asses once in a while, that kind of thing. So it's like, it's kind of hard, we sometimes have like kind of like short-term rivalries going on, but nothing that particularly stands out or like has any particular impact. But I gotta say, and I know this is pretty terrible, get ready for it. One of my favorite rivalries to watch this year has been basically Pheromones versus Akito and Sanshiro Takagi.
Oh, no.
I am an unashamed Pheromones fan, but at the same time, it totally goes in line with the Pheromones, like what they're actually trying to do, they're basically trying to push the boundaries of what is acceptable. Because I mean, as wrestling fans, people will accept almost anything, like from like unbelievable violence, like blood flying out everywhere, to like, dead dudes coming back to life and using electricity to kill each other, that kind of thing. And then you've got the Pheromones who basically like to get their asses out once in a while and use, ass-based attacks and stuff like that. And that's where people want to draw the line, huh? they keep mixing it up, they don't just rely on the exact same jokes or the exact same things every time. They gotta keep it fresh somehow, whether it's like coming up with increasingly outrageous team attacks or just you know, bringing out something completely unexpected. Like, for example, at the Cyber Fight Fest, when they had that slot machine thing coming out, I was just like, I mean, that was the first of many times in that show when I thought I'd accidentally smoked something on the way in. You know, it was like, did I inhale something on the way into the venue? What is going on here? Yeah. And but like, so far, they've always managed to keep things interesting, or at very least keep things entertaining. Like, they haven't, I mean, one thing with DDT is they don't run jokes into the ground as such. Like, you know, they will mix things up after a while if it seems like something's getting stale, or if it isn't continuing to be popular or something like that. And the Pheromones, like, keep adding just increasingly crazy stuff to their whole performance and their presentation. And, like, I'm here for it, honestly. You know, like, it leads to some of my most retweeted photos and videos. It's fantastic stuff.
I'm glad it's for somebody.
Yeah. Yes. It's always at least one huge pervert like Michelle who enjoys that kind of thing.
I'm glad you said it and I did not.
Yeah.
Browsing through some of the listeners' votes, we mentioned Julia versus Zuzu Suzuki actually got a lot of votes. Kenno versus Kaito Kiyomiya, Desperado versus Jun Kasai got votes. And going to the lesser voted rivalries, I think there are quite interesting ones in there. For example, Natsupoi versus Tam Nakano, which was a big rivalry in Stardom this year. Then a rivalry that recently culminated as well with Asuka winning the Sendai Girls Championship. I think that's a rivalry that's not really on the radar of many people, as Sendai Girls also is a promotion that isn't watched by a lot of people outside of Japan. That's always what I sense. But it's Asuka versus Chihiro Hashimoto. That was a rivalry for most of the year in Sendai Girls, actually. So that deserves a shout-out as well. And one that took me off guard, Dylan, is Shun Skywalker versus Masquerade. Wasn't that last year?
That indeed was. So that's that's interesting. And obviously, you know, Masquerade dissolved pretty quickly.
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay. I mean, it kind of led into where, you know, Red became Zebra. You know, it kind of led into it. But yeah, I don't think that would be an appropriate for this year.
Yes. Okay, that covers best rivalry.
I just want to say one thing, and again, to kind of go with my point, you know, Julian Suzu was the top vote getter, along with Natural Vibes and Zebrats. I'd really be interested to see how that would play out, because they had this mega emotional moment in the final show of the five-star Grand Prix in their match, going to the draw, the tears that were shed, and all the emotions that came with it. We have not seen that as of the voting time with Shuri and Julia. So I think after that happens, I think that would change people's votes. The real best vote of this, like the most normal, or not the most normal, but the like most realistic answer has to be Ibushi versus New Japan. Yeah, that's the one that got the most buzz and the hype, and that had real heat to it. Mm-hmm. you know, we don't know where it's setting up or where it's leading. Michelle, you mentioned Ibushi, you know, perhaps secretly at God Barry Pro there.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, here's the thing with Ibushi, like, his way of thinking is so unique. if he ended up joining Gambare Pro at some point, even just as like, say it's Wrestle Sekigahara 2 next year, right? It wouldn't be completely like shocking to see him there in a way.
No.
I kind of feel like he just sort of does what he feels like he wants to do, or like, I don't know, I think it's starting to feel like more and more like he's got his own kind of philosophy on like what he wants to do as a wrestler, and for whatever reason, well, you know, it's, yeah, there seems to be lots of reasons that he seems to be pissed at New Japan right now. but this is the thing, it's so difficult to predict his next move. It's amazing.
Yeah, not to cut you off, but I just wanted to say that I think some of the wrestlers there must have noticed too, because Watase mentioned, he says, I'll defend the title against anybody, even somebody at an institute somewhere. That would be there. So I think that he wasn't as well hidden as he might have thought he was going in there.
I mean, like, a few of us saw him standing there. Like, he was just sort of hanging out, like, in the corner, like, with, I think at one point, I think Soma Takao was there, and, like, there was a guy there who kind of looked like Kazuki Hirata, but it might have just been someone with similar hair or something, I don't know. But there were a bunch of wrestlers just sort of hanging with him in the corner, like, and they were all just chilling and watching GamPro together. It was nice.
That is pretty cool. I've heard rumors that he could, like, come out with some crazy shoot video, like, tell the real story of New Japan. That's just something that's been rumored about, that he might, because it seems like, especially what he said on Twitter, he's not afraid to burn bridges either. Like you said, he is a guy that has his own agenda that may not be easily apparent to the rest of the world of wrestling, but he has his own plan. So I could totally see him doing something, but I definitely think we have to mention that vote, at least New Japan versus Ibushi.
That's a good vote. Yeah.
Yes, that is definitely something much like also Noah versus Sensible Booking.
Yep. Oh my goodness.
I want to give a shout out to our good friend Sven, because this year he has not mentioned Stardom versus Good Booking. So maybe in his eyes, Stardom maybe moves forward.
Seems like every year somebody says something like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Going from here to most charismatic, and I'll start with this one. I got three wrestlers in my honorable mentions. Mio Watanabe made my top three at the half-year point. I still think that she is one of the most charismatic figures in TJPW. She always gets the crowd hyped up with the up girls at the beginning of these shows, and just extremely sympathetic figure whenever she comes out for her entrance, and you can easily get behind her in her matches. Elinda Man, I think, has dropped off a little still, though. He is very charismatic, I think. I actually ultimately have to agree with what you said, Dylan, at the beginning of the year, I think it was. Even though he's the champion in great, it doesn't really feel like he is the main focus of the company. And him being in the junior tournaments of New Japan hasn't really helped him a lot either. So I got to give that to you, ultimately.
Well, I understand why I was the bad guy for that, because everybody loves Lindemann.
And I
love Lindemann. I was really defending him, like, more than anything, because I think he deserved a lot better. It is title run overall. And but he's still charismatic, though. That's a great pick, though.
He is. And another one who is extremely charismatic, who also got votes for most underrated, and I could have also made a case for him at most underrated. That's Czech Shimatani from Great as well, one of the guys of Bulk Orchestra. He recently had this great lumberjack match with Michiko Miyagi. Just a tremendously entertaining guy who doesn't get the love he deserves.
Yeah.
For my top three, first I went to Dragon Gate. I think that KZ is an amazing leader for Natural Vibes. Most Dragon Gate shows that get aired actually start with a Natural Vibes six-man tag. And much like Mio Watanabe and the Up Up Girls starting out the shows, KZ and his guys starting out Dragon Gate shows with their dancing, it is always just this hype factor that gets the Dragon Gate shows going. He's tremendous on the mic. He had this great rivalry with Shun Skywalker, much like I mentioned. So he's my number three. For my number two, I have Julia. I think Julia has shown throughout the entire year, not only with the rivalry with Shuri, but also throughout everything else that she did, media and interviews and promos, that she is the main factor going forward for Stardom and going to lead them into the new year. And once again, I got a Dragon Gate sandwich here on top. Shun Skywalker, undefeated, most charismatic. The guy is awesome. He's delusional. His character is he's a completely lunatic, but such an entertaining man, such an entertaining character, and going to look forward to his 2023. Yeah. How about you, Michelle?
So yeah, I've got a few, like, you know, got a few thoughts on that. I would go with Kazusada Higuchi mainly because of the aura that he has. Like, whenever, like, he does pretty much anything in DDT, like, from his entrance with his, like, completely epic entrance music to just, you know, his general appearance, you know, and, like, just the way, again, it's like a way he's presented is just, you know, he feels like a champion, you know, so he feels like someone who could, you know, be at the top of DDT for a long time. Of course, he's got his title match tomorrow, so let's see what happens there. But, you know, like, it's just, you cannot take your eyes off him when he's in the ring. And just, like, you know, you can feel the, like, you know, when you're actually, like, in the hall watching him, you can feel, like, everyone just getting, like, you know, anticipation for this match that he's about to show us. You know, it's just like, oh, here he comes. Oh, he's awesome. And it's just like, he's just so unbelievably captivating, just, you know, with his presence. I feel like people don't think of him as a particularly charismatic guy, but, you know, because he tends to be a man of few words. Yeah. But, you know, everyone pays attention to him, like, whenever he's, like, you know, pretty much doing anything. It's just, he commands the attention, you know. So, like, I would definitely have him in my top three for most charismatic. And on by the same token, again, this is gonna seem like such an obvious answer, oh my god, but yeah, Ken Oka, right? Because, like, whenever, okay, you're gonna, I really hope one day you have a chance to experience a live GunPro show, because you've got to feel the energy in the room when Ken comes in, and, like, you know, especially during his singles matches, everyone is on Ken's side. You know, like, it was literally, you know, literally everyone in the room is supporting Ken. He's just, yeah, he's just got this magnetism to him, and he just seems like, you know, he's got this very genuine side to him. And, like, you know, I think a lot, some wrestlers kind of lack that sort of human connection with the audience. But, you know, this is Ken Oka. You know, he is, like, the human connection, you know. And I thoroughly enjoy just seeing him anywhere, because everyone just gets so excited to see him. And when he's cutting his promos, he puts all his passion and all his energy into it. You know, at the smaller shows, they also have, like, what they do, like, they basically gather all the fans together at ringside, and Ken just sort of chats about, you know, his general feelings about wrestling at that moment in time. Yes. And, like, you know, how he wants, you know, GunPro to go forward in the future and stuff like that. And sometimes he's just talking nonsense, but sometimes he's got some, like, really genuinely, like, insightful stuff to say. And it's just like everyone is hanging on his every single word that comes out of his mouth, and it's just really incredible to see. And although it's on maybe a smaller scale to, like, other promotions, and, like, you know, I would still count him as being an extremely charismatic person.
I loved it when he just casually used to bring out Shinjiro Otani at the end of the shows, and they just chatted and just stood ringside. There was just a lovely part. So yeah, Ken Oka is great.
Yeah, he's fantastic. And again, he's another reason why more people need to be watching GunPro, goddammit.
And he also got in this incredible shape this year, man.
He really did. He worked so hard. Like, I mean, it's been really nice, like, seeing his progress, you know. Like, he's always updating with photos of himself and, like, photos of his obvious training and anything like that, and, like, videos of his training. And it's just, he's a very inspirational person, because, I mean, obviously, Gambare, like, literally means to try your best, to put all your effort into something. And, like, he is pretty much the embodiment of that kind of attitude, you know, and it shows not only, like, inside the ring, but outside of it as well. And I really think that deserves more recognition than he gets.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
One more I want to shout out. He always is one of the greats when it comes to interacting with fans. He also has his own show on Nico Nico, where he just talks about his experiences in the last couple of weeks. Fuminori Abe, just a great guy. So funny, so charismatic, so sympathetic, and amazing figure. Dylan, what about you?
Well, first of all, I got to praise you, Michelle, because I was not anticipating that show of force there about watching Gambari Pro. I was feeling something there. You were like, hey, you need to watch it or else. It was kind of the feeling I got from you on there.
I really feel very strongly about that, though, because, it's just like, sometimes it feels like if any other company was putting out such consistently high quality shows and such amazing experiences just generally as a wrestling fan, if any other promotion was doing it, it feels like it would be like a promotion on everyone's lips. Like people would not stop talking about it. And GAMPRO just doesn't seem to get that recognition, and it kind of pisses me off, honestly.
Okay, let's calm the rage. This is supposed to be a happy show.
Calm, okay, I can do it.
for my picks anyway, I liked all of your picks too. I will always support a Ken Oka mention on this show. For me, my top three, my honorable mentions or whatever, I would say Gotcha King, Yuki Mashiro from Ice Ribbon. I'm going to retire soon, so this may be our last chance to talk about her. But very fun, charismatic performer. Always getting in there, not just with the wrestling, but the comedic stylings that you can only get in Ice Ribbon. And they represent what I just said. Be happy with pro wrestling, but her journey's ending at the end of the year. But she's a super charismatic performer. I highly recommend watching one of her matches at least and checking her out, because she's a lot of fun. My number two had to be Jun Kasai. I just think there's a reason why he's this legendary figure to so many people. And even now in 2022, some would say that he's not in his prime anymore, but he still feels like this major character, this major figure almost in Japanese wrestling, where he can show up on any show and like stand out. Even if you've never seen him before, he automatically grabs you. The crazy monkey, man, he has something special about him that you just can't teach. This sounds like a ridiculous comparison on his head, but I feel somewhat similarly about Julia, where there are some people, the example that I would go to for this sort of example is like Hiromu. And it shows you how bad New Japan's done, bad of a job they've done that he didn't get any votes for this. He's not really on the radar because he's always always up there, but just not this year. But he's like this hyper expressive character. Julia is not like that at all. But the thing with her is as soon as she walks out of the stage, everyone's eyes go to her. It's like she commands everyone's attention immediately. She just has something that you can't teach. And I think that Jun Kasai has that as well. But to me, I ultimately agree with you. To me, this is one of the much like the last award with Most Improved, this was one of the easier awards to me. I had to go with Shun Skywalker, just on a different level than anybody else, in my opinion. I just think he's an awesome character and a very charismatic performer.
Yes, absolutely. Looking at the listeners' votes here, why do I have them? For most charismatic, Shun Skywalker also ran away with the vote by the listeners. Then we also have Kento Miyahara, who is of course always a household name when it comes to this category, and Julia on number two. Other mentions that we have not talked about, for example, Toru is one of those indie guys that is a
TTT baby.
Not anymore. Nope. Kairi gets mentioned. Tam Nakano, Yuki Yoshioka, Naito, of course, Desperado, Daisuke Sasaki. Yeah, all those names that usually pop up in this category that got mentioned here.
Oh, yeah, the constant figure, Kazuyuki Fujita.
Yeah.
Charismatic character that we go with.
Yeah. I don't know what exactly makes him very charismatic, but of course, yeah, why not?
Yeah, I was going to mention Kento, but I kind of thought that was a really obvious answer, And I just thought, that's like really, really basic, oh my god. But, to be fair, though, he is pretty much like the human embodiment of charisma. It's just, again, like just having the experience of seeing him live, you know, then just seeing like the overwhelming support this guy has, you know, like, yeah, All Japan had better take good care of him. Just got to say that. You know?
knock on wood here. Knock on wood.
Yeah, knock on wood. Because, I mean, if that guy goes freelance, everybody's screwed.
Yep. That would be really bad for him.
That would be terrible. Yeah. Let's just hope that no, doesn't come to that. Yeah.
Yes. Best promotion, I think. Unless anything else for most charismatic. That's not the case.
Yeah.
All right. Well, do I really need to ask, Michelle, or do you want to make the case for Ganbare Pro right away?
Well, that is on my list. Okay. Yeah, of course it is. Because, well, you know, this is something I will be shouting from rooftops for years to come until people start listening. Just, you know, like, if you want a promotion that is consistently putting out high quality matches and compelling shows and like interesting storylines and just like pretty much anything you could want from a wrestling company, honestly, Ganpro has all that, you know, like, you know, they have so many good things going for them and so few people seem to be really talking about them, and that's just sad. Please watch Ganpro. So, yeah, that's my case for Ganpro. I mean, you knew what was coming.
Sure.
Yeah. I think it's a very good candidate, generally, though, because, I mean, they've had a very good year. I mean, Wrestle Sekigahara was one of my favorite shows this year, and it takes, you know, a very special kind of promotion to be able to pull off the kind of things that they do. You know, like, they do, you know, they're just great. They're just brilliant.
Well... That is your case. I expect you nothing less. So that is it.
Yep.
Dylan, what do you have?
And it's worth mentioning that Ganpro did get a vote on here too from one of the other voters. So
you know who that was? Do you want to know, Dylan?
Who
voted for Ganbare Pro?
Who
flushed it?
Flush. Okay. Yes. He's pulling out a little bit of a curveball on us here, though. Okay.
Shout out to Flosh, to you, Michelle. I have a podcast, German podcast with Flosh, where we tend to talk about Ganbare Pro quite a lot. So
that is,
and he is
I study German.
and Flosh is a spiritual, like unofficial third member of the show normally as well. So I have a lot of love for Flosh. I respect his opinion as well. For me, this award, to me, there was a clear-cut 1 and 2, and then there were, you know, I kind of divided promotions. There were some that I liked, you know, that I enjoyed. Maybe they were smaller promotions. And then there were some promotions that were bigger that I just thought it was a really rocky year for a lot of Japanese pro wrestling, in my opinion, for a lot of promotions.
Yeah,
you know. So I really had some trouble picking this because I really – so, for example, I love Ice Ribbon as a fan, but also it's hard for me to say they're a promotion of the year when so many people left and they had so many struggles overall, you know, including the guy who's renovating Ganjo, like Joshi Ganbare Pro, who just went from Ice Ribbon to there recently. So I had a hard time picking them. So I had to kind of put my objectivity on focus here. Again, to me, the top two were very easy, and it was just a matter of who I was going to pick. But I think, actually, of everyone, of all the men's companies, and I feel like, I mean, I'm sure I've said them before over the years, but I think if you, you look at all the big men's companies, besides the one I'm going to mention in a second, I would say that New Japan was probably more enjoyable to watch than, like, your Noah's and your All Japan's. I'm sorry, Michelle. Like, DDT, I thought, didn't have the greatest year of their performance.
Yeah, I mean, but I think DDT didn't necessarily have a bad year because, I mean... because it's their 25th anniversary year, there were a lot of really entertaining callbacks to, like, the history of DDT, and, like, you know, they brought back a lot of guys who were in there in the past and everything. And I feel like it wasn't necessarily a bad year, but it definitely wasn't a standout year for them. And I feel like it really should have been.
And I feel like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it hinged so much on Higuchi's reign, which has been awesome. That's been a highlight of anywhere in wrestling. But I think the rest of the, remember the tournament they just had, the KOD. It's like there was a lot of guys that I thought really underperformed or were like, you know, Joey Janela there, and I didn't really want to watch him that much in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, the less I say about Joey Janela, the better, right, frankly, because if you think I'm angry about people not watching GANPRO, well, yeah.
Hey, I'm completely with you on this one, Michelle. Unleash the rage this time when it comes to Janela. But I think when you compare what they've done, I think they had a pretty decent bounce back early on too, just from like a business analyst type of perspective. I think they've really kind of gone down when it came to Jay's title run. I mean, they made some crazy moves putting Tama in the main event against Jay White, and I knew that wasn't going to be very successful, but we'll see what happens going in there. I actually thought their tag league was better than usual, honestly. When it comes to their junior league, I thought really impressed me, actually. And I thought they did, and I will say this too about New Japan. I've grown to really respect Obari as an owner, because, or president, or whatever his title is, because we're seeing them work with all of these different companies that we haven't seen before. They're trying different things. Not everything's perfect. Some of the stuff still sucks, I'm not going to lie to you. But I like that they're making an effort to do a lot of different things going in there and working with different companies. I think it's opened up some good spots for a lot of these guys. Even something like all the way back in, the New Japan Cup, where you had Shima go in advance pretty deep into the tournament. And I don't think we would have seen that in years prior. So I will give them a little bit of love. But the top two to me clearly were Dragon Gate and Stardom. And it was just a matter of who I would pick first between them. I think the only thing that the reason that I would pick Stardom ahead of DG is only because I think that ultimately, and again, we're putting our faith in something. By the time this comes out, maybe I'll look like an idiot because the show tanked and it was
I don't think so.
But I think the thing is, they built their show so well, their number one show of the year so well, and they built big shows in the past so well this year, that I've loved what they've put together, and I think they've done such a great job. Compare that to what Dragon Gate did with Kobe World, to me, was their lowest point of the whole year, and it was for their biggest show. I think that was the one area where they kind of dropped the ball with everything at the end of it. But the other 11 months were all A+, and I think they've had a good, like a very, very good year, actually, overall. But that little flub in the Kobe World, and again, maybe I'll change my mind after this show, but I agree with you. I'm pretty confident this is going to be a great show and very emotional. That's the one thing that makes me pick Stardom over DG.
Yeah, I agree with your top three, just in slight different order. I also got New Japan on my top three. I think they really bounced back from a bad last year. I think they had a lot to hold on to. This year specifically, of course, lots of people also mentioned Okada in our top categories being one of the factors, one of the main factors. And you've said it too, that he has had a great year so far, which will culminate January 4, of course, is always part of the year before then, will culminate in him winning the title. But also the junior tag league, I enjoyed it a lot. The junior singles league was good. The G1 was good. So I enjoyed these highlights of the year. We had some great matches in the New Japan TV title tournament with Ren Narita and Tomohiro Ishii. We had this great Minoru Suzuki versus Hiromu Takahashi match in March. So lots of great moments this year in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Stardom is my number two. I got behind a lot of what Stardom has done this year. I sometimes struggle with the structure of the entire promotion. For example, when they run a tournament and all of a sudden there's this big show with big title matches in the middle of the tournament, that sometimes really gets me out of Stardom, and I have trouble following along then. My number one group, even though I agree with you, Dragon Gate's big show this year was a disappointment, still, though, that's the company that I followed throughout the year and that has given me the best stories to get behind, and that has also showed me that they really care about their young guys, of their rookies. They are the company that does that exceptionally well and positions their own homegrown talent as the main stars, and the fans always get behind them. So Dragon Gate this year is my number one. I want to give three more shout-outs. Of course, Ganbare Pro is part of those shout-outs. I really love the promotion. I also am a big, big fan of Tenryo Project. I think that they... I've said it on Twitter a couple of weeks ago. They are basically just a bunch of indie guys and guys from different promotions coming together, but they've managed to develop their own style of booking. They've managed their own style of main events, and they've also developed their own atmosphere at the shows that they do. So this new attempt of Tenryo Project is very much appreciated by me. It's difficult to watch because all their shows are on their pay-per-views. The same goes for another shout out. It's not really a company, but they've done great things this year with three shows that they did. It's Taka Taichi Despi Mania. If that would be a company, that would be my number one vote because these shows have been amazing this year.
Doesn't that count for JTO?
Yeah, well, it's kind of not a JTO show really because they get so many guys from New Japan and other groups coming into that. But I could count it for JTO if you want to.
Yeah, I think that would at least make it a company.
It would make it a company, but it's not really a JTO show. That's why I really struggle with that.
Yes, it's not really a company either. So we have to make some decisions here.
I still give the shout out here. Best promotion. Okay. Yeah, that's my votes. You mentioned it. The listeners also mentioned Dragon Gate, mentioned Stardom. The one that I was curious about hearing your opinion, Dylan, is Great, because I think they've dropped off tremendously throughout the year 2022, much due to the fact that they don't really know what they want to be as a company. And I think the owner is listening to Shima much too often and for his crazy booking ideas. They've done this great MMA deal where the one guy coming out was not a great guy. It was Den Tamura who came out with a great performance against Hideki Zekine. Then they brought in all these luchadors. I mean, Yutani and Flamita, they are great. They are bringing in this pizza guy for the big show at the end of the year. They brought in Jun Kasai for a deathmatch main event. What is this company supposed to be?
Yeah, I've made this point multiple times over this year where it feels like they've lost their way somewhere along the line. And yeah, I mean, like I said, I've said all that before, and I feel even stronger about it as we close out the year. I definitely think if you look at where they were at the start of the year to now, it's definitely gone a ways down, and I really think that they botched Lindemann's title reign, honestly, pretty bad. I mean, I liked a lot of his matches because he's a great performer, but I never really felt he was he was able to really be a great champion for all kinds of reasons. And then the tag titles, they also botched as well when they came in. So I feel like that's another thing. I think they've gone away from the UWF stuff. And for reasons I don't understand, like overall, because I thought that really made them stand out on this indie scene, where I think you need a hook these days to really get people talking about you, get people interested. And I thought they had that early on. I remember when Show came in from New Japan, that first big show they had, and it felt like a big deal, that great show then. Now I just, like you said, you're talking about, I don't even know who this pizza guy is, but he's some indie geek that I definitely, you can
maybe. There's one backstage segment at AEW as well with Jericho, I think.
Well, that only lowers my opinion of him overall. Yeah. So I don't see him.
Sorry, I was at the show where they announced a pizza guy coming in, and like the audience reaction was not. It was just kind of like, eh? Who does this? Yeah. Why do we care? Okay, he likes pizza? Okay.
Yeah, he wrestles
all
with
right,
wrestles
moving
with the pizza.
On.
Yeah, so that is great. Definitely not the company that it used to be at the end of 2021.
Let me just say one more thing, too. That MMA show was awful. Well, what a stupid idea
that
was. I don't know if you watched it or not.
I've not watched it, no.
Well, that's because you're smart. you didn't watch it.
But I read about it, and I decided to. No, I'm not going to watch it.
Yes, unlike the stupid one, me, that watched it. And it's just like, wow. You know, say what you want, because everyone is always like, ha, 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 just like Enochism. But to be fair, Nagata fought like the top fighters in the whole world, like yes. Krokop and these guys. These great guys, they fought bums, and they still looked. They still got embarrassed up and down the card. You know, it's crazy to me. It was very depressing watching
Minoru. You might as well shut down the UWF brand now after this.
Yeah, like it's going to be tough now. It was very depressing to see Minoru Tanaka, a man I love and respect so much, just look awful in the ring. And yeah, that great, definitely not my favorite. I apologize. I had to get that off my chest because I watched that stupid show. Why did I waste the time, Striga?
I don't know. I thought about watching, and then I just browsed Twitter and I said, I probably watched the Hideki versus Tamura fight because that actually is the one that looked good. But yeah, everything else, no, I will not. Other votes that we had was TJPW, DDT on the same level. Big Japan got 3 votes as well. Then we got Noah, only 1 vote. Dylan, what do you make of this?
Yeah, Noah and All Japan both coming in with just 1 vote a year. Yeah. Pretty well deserved, I would say. You know, I don't think it was a very good year, specifically for them. I think it was actually a really bad year, up and down. I think there's nothing I can really point to from a business perspective, an entertainment perspective, story perspective. There's just not a lot there. I will say the one thing that I will point to them, and I would point to them over All Japan, and I think the one good thing about them in general is I think that they've done a very effective job of building to this Muto retirement angle overall, and I think that that's something that's going to be – I mean, it's clear that this Budokan show is going to be a huge success off of the back of Nakamura and Muto. And, you know, it's just going to be up to them where they take it. I've said it before that I think that the Muto Dome show will outdo Wrestle Kingdom. And I think you know, a lot of reports have come out that even New Japan themselves are a little worried about that possibility happening. And I think that that is a case that's going to be a huge deal, that Muto retirement show in the Dome. I don't know what they're going to do in the main event overall when it comes to that. We speculated maybe like Okada. You know, my speculation on that is who would be bigger than Nakamura, because that's a really huge match. So I would think it would have to be bigger, but who knows with Noah? It's remember when we were talking about Japan, it's like, who knows what these companies are thinking at the end of the day. They might have him beat Kaito again in the main event of the Dome to win the title. Although I still stand by prediction that he will wrestle a WrestleMania match after his supposed retirement overall. Yeah. But that's the one thing I will say about Noah, is that I think that they've effectively built this Muto retirement. They put all of their eggs in this basket. I've said it before, I'll say it again. What will they do with that? I don't know. I don't have a lot of faith in them, but All Japan, I think they're more based around the young guys right now, although I think with Suwama there, I'm always a little leery of getting my hopes up too much overall with them if things go how they've been going. Who's to say what will happen next with them, but I do think that if they just get their heads on straight, both companies have a bright future possibility. I personally don't have a lot of faith in that with what we've seen this year.
Yes, that is ultimately it, I think. Yeah, other votes, we got Choco Pro votes, of course. We have Freedoms that got a shout out here in this category. Actress Girls, POJ, Ice Ribbon, Sendai Girls, of course. That is all mentioned here. So very, very different takes. And different takes continue also with our next category, I think it's show of the year, and I'm just looking at the listeners' votes here. The top vote getter for show of the year was TJPW's Summer Sun Princess from July 9, and that is actually my number 2 pick. Everybody who knows me knows that I am someone who values complete shows and the vibe that complete shows give you as a listener. And I think that this show, once again, was one of those shows that proved why TJPW is such a great company to follow. They had this great crowd in Ottawa. They had a great main event with Shoko Nakajima and Rika Tatsumi. Tag title, Saki Akai and Yuki Arai defeated the Magical Sugar Rabbits there. Mio Yamashita with this Thunder Rosa, Alex Vincere and Maki Ito, Mei Suruga and Suzume in their great tag team against Arisu, Endo and Riho. there was just a lot to clamor onto on this show, so I completely get why it got so many votes. Number two is Noah, the New Year at Budokan from January 1st of this year. I did not consider that for my top votes, but I can also understand why people voted for that. And then the number three for the listeners is actually my number one. It is the Taka Taichi Despi Mania show from September 12th that had the incredible main event between El Desperado and Jun Kasai right now, as we speak, voted at 9.49 on Cage Match. And just throughout the card, some very cool moments with the former K-Dojo mates, Isami Kodaka, Yasu Urano, and Yuji Hino returning or reuniting against the newest trainees of Taka Michinoku. We had an incredible Yoshi tag match with Maika and Mirai. Maika returning to her home grounds of JDO. They teamed against Aoi and Tomoka Inaba. Just incredible stuff there. And throughout the card, just very, very good feel-good vibe of this entire show. Yoyogi National Stadium or Gymnasium has become one of my favorite venues because so many cool shows took place in this venue this year. And for example, also two of my favorite, two of my honorable mentions as well, the Tradition Fujinami Anniversary Show took place there on December 1st. And of course, the other JTO, Taka Taichi Despi Mania on December 19. But my number three is a show. I'm just looking at it. If that got, yes, it got actually a vote. It's Big Japan Welcome Back from the Yokohama Budokan, which was one of these rare shows this year that really showed what Big Japan could actually be if it was a well-run company, with, of course, Yuji Okabayashi and Daisuke Sekimoto in the main, but Drew Parker and Yuko Miyamoto had a great deathmatch, title match. Astronauts versus Okami was great. Sekifuda defending the junior title against Kosuke Sato, who is dearly missing from Big Japan due to his injury, was a great match. And throughout the card, also stuff from Big Japan's past. Onryo, Michelle, he was in the opening match here. So there was just a good vibe for Big Japan. I was so happy to see the big crowd for them, 1,800 fans there. Was one of the bigger crowds in Yokohama during Golden Week. And yeah, I really appreciated that show. So that is my shout outs. And from here, we go to Dylan.
Yeah, I really think the TJP show was... You got to remember, that's the show where the streamers were back and the fans allowed to cheer. The main event was a great match on that show for sure. But, you know, I do think that I was... to be honest, I thought this was a pretty surprising way that the votes went, in all honesty. About the Noah show, I actually had a Noah show in my top three, but it wasn't that one. I thought that the show they had in July at Budokan was a much better show than the one on January 1st. I remember watching that and all of the hope that everybody had. I really didn't have that much hope. I was already too jaded to have it, but the vibe was still nice to have. You know, you had Kaito beating Muto. You had Kenno winning the title in the main event. You had that great tag match. You know, there was a lot of good things coming out of that show, and most shows coming out of it, there wasn't a lot of that those great moments overall for Noah. So I had that in my top three. I had the Stardom final of the Grand Prix, the five-star Grand Prix, just an absolutely fantastic in-ring show. All the way, you know, multiple matches you could point to as great matches.
I actually forgot that. I have that in my honorable mentions as well. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I would have it as my number two. It did get votes as well. Yeah. From the listeners. So to me, that was like an amazing show, capped off with Julia's climactic win. To me, though, this was unquestionably the easiest award to vote for me. I had to vote for Hana Kimura Memorial Show 2 Bagus. It's like stunning to me in so many ways that didn't get more love. I mean, it still was up there, but to me, that show coming in, I was really wondering how they were going to pull that off overall, like for a second show after last year's. You know, last year's show was a very somber type of show, like based off this horrible tragedy that we all had. that we all went through, and particularly Kyoko Kimura as well. This second one, I was really questioning, like, how was this going to look like? Is it going to be a repeat of last year? And maybe not in a happy way. But the way that it actually played out was so much better than I feared in my mind, and it was so amazing. I think I said this when the show happened at the end, and like, that to me is a show that I'll never forget overall. And not even just from the I mean, you had the emotion of it all, but you also had the amazing surprises, like with Kyoko and Jungle Kiona wrestling, like totally unannounced. You had the main event, which was an awesome match. This was just like, that to me was everything right about wrestling, in my opinion, on that show. And to me, it was like the clear winner. And you look at a lot of these shows as well, like, and I think that's why this particular award played out how it did, not just in terms of like the top vote getter or whatever, but if you just look at up and down, you see all these different candidates. The way wrestling has grown, and in particular Japanese wrestling, I think has steered away from full shows being like very noteworthy overall. Mm-hmm. A lot of these shows here, you know, it's more like you're with the streaming services, with things like that, you're more apt to pick and choose and maybe skip a lot of stuff. And that's why I think that the show, the votes that we had for all of them turned out how they did up and down. But yeah, to me anyway, Bagus was like the clear cut winner to me. And I like I said, that's going to be one of the more memorable shows for decades to come. And I genuinely believe that.
Wow. I don't think that in my mind it will last that long, but I definitely can see why you get behind it, and I still have it for best moment. I give a shout out to that in that category. I'm just glad we did the half year awards, because in the half year awards it got much more love. Michelle, your show.
Okay, well, I think we all know what one of my shows of the year is going to be. I mean, I've been to a lot of actually really amazing shows this year. I've been very, very lucky in that respect. So actually choosing which three were the best for me, or which three were my favorite, was actually quite a task. But so I'm just going to give you a kind of a selection of, you know, some of the stuff that I really enjoyed from this year. So, of course, I'm going to mention a Ganpro show first, Wrestle Sekigahara. At Otaku General Gymnasium. That was, I mean, not a single minute was wasted in that show, you know. I mean, it was, there was no filler, you know, so it's just like from the start to the end, you know, you had just a very complete experience. And you know, it was, of course, a real treat for Ganpro fans, but I think it's also a really good place for new Ganpro fans to start. Because it has everything that makes Ganpro special. And it also has a really fun match between Minoru Suzuki and Shuichiro Katsumura.
Oh, yeah.
And it was... Okay, so that was the first Kaze Ninare, like, by the audience in, like, 2 years or something like that. And I actually... Okay, I had, like, one of my moments on Twitter this year where... there was a pro wrestling news website which was reporting, like, you know, Kaze Ninare at a New Japan show. And this is, they were reporting that is the first Kaze Ninare in X amount of time. I was like, you know, I didn't really want to be that guy, but I was. So I was just like, guys, actually, yeah. It wasn't the first Kaze Ninare in this amount of time, because Ganpro did it first. You know, so they had to correct it, yeah. But, you know, it was so really, I mean, that was just a really good experience, you know. Like, it was a kind of show where you come out of it just feeling really, really happy you were there to experience it. You know, and like, you know, but wasn't, you know, but was like I say, but was just, it was so well thought out. It was just a really well constructed show. Like, I mean, it's like occasionally when you get some other promotions doing big shows, and occasionally DDT is kind of guilty of this as well. They'll have a couple of matches where you just kind of get the impression they didn't know what else to do with the guys who were left over after they made the main card. So we're just like, okay, let's just put these guys in a six-man tag or something like that. And it was nothing like that. You know, it felt like every match in that show had some kind of significance or some kind of, you know, special meaning or something like that. and they built up to it really well, and it was a very rewarding experience as a fan, you know. So like, I cannot wait to see what they do at Wrestle Sekigahara 2, because that's going to be amazing too, I'm certain. Another one that, okay, now this show had a couple of hiccups, but overall it was also a very positive experience, and you know, something that I was actually had a lot of, you know, anticipation for, Cyber Fight Festival. Now, it wasn't a flawless show, but it was one of the most memorable, like, in terms of, again, in terms of fan experience and the production values of that show. I mean, some of the entrances were just like, what on earth is happening here? Oh my god, like, you know, he had stuff like Shoko Nakajima's entrance with all the dinosaurs. And like, I couldn't understand what I was watching at first. I was just like looking, okay, what, why? Okay, this is a thing. All right, yeah, let's go. Yeah, it's just, don't question it, just have a fun time. You know? And then like, you know, just like, we did so much. I mean, of course, like ridiculously high production values and like a lot of creativity going into it. There were one or two hiccups, like the unfortunate incident with Tetsuya Endo. Like, that was very hard to watch, but it's one of those things, you know, it's going to happen sometimes, you know? So it's not, you know, like, nobody really was, like, at fault there as such, you know? Like, it was, I feel like that was just a very unfortunate thing to happen.
Yeah, Dylan and I discussed it at the time, that it really wasn't to the fault of Nakajima. It just happened,
yeah. Yeah, it was just one of those things. I mean, like, you know, I'm sure Nakajima is like a, you know, he is a professional, you know, like, I'm sure, like, of course he was, is his intention. He was just, you know, it just, you know, it's one of those things that happens in pro wrestling sometimes, and it's not really anybody's fault. You know, it's just, it's a risk of the job, you know, it's just, you know, you can't really put him at fault for that. So like, I never really, you know, I mean, that one ended badly, but you know, like, you know, most of the stuff in the rest of the show more than made up for it. There was one match that, well, I don't know if you saw me live tweeting a show at the time, but it was one match that I basically didn't want to watch on principle just because of one of the participants. I'm not going to try and drag the show down here too much because I don't want to, you know, focus on the negative things. But I did spend that particular match just live tweeting my playing Animal Crossing on my Twitch. I was like, yay, I caught some insects. Yeah. And then after that match was finished, okay, I was like, okay, that guy's gone. Time to enjoy the show again. Yeah. You know, so although it wasn't a perfect show, I still had like a really amazing time there. And like, I really hope we get more shows like that in, well, you know, in the future, but you know, just without the unfortunate stuff. So yeah, but yeah, Cyber Fight Festival is always a good time. And yeah. I've got one that, you know, maybe not like the best show, but definitely one of the most enjoyable. So this one took place on New Year's Day and was just one of the standout events of the day. I'm sure you all know what I'm talking about here. I am, of course, talking about Shinjuku Nichome Pro Wrestling in the Starfield. Yeah.
Of course.
Okay, so that was just, I guess it's just such a fun way to start a new year, is in a basement watching gay wrestling. You know, that's, it's brilliant. You know, who doesn't want to do that? So, yeah, Shinjuku Nicho Pro is just, it's just, it's always just such a fun time. You know, like, you cannot not have fun at Nicho Pro. Yeah. And, like, it's just such a pity that, you know, it's not so easy to, you know, talk more about it because there's some sort of, you know, there's a lot of nudity and stuff like that, you know, but, you know, it's just, it was just such a fun time, and it's always a good way to start a new year, so, yeah, go for it.
Wow, yes.
Yeah.
Did not expect the last one, but more power to you for going to these shows. What was your favorite, like, tiny indie show this year?
I've been to a lot of tiny indie shows. Like, there was, I mean, like, I think, like, one of the smallest, I mean, I used to go to this one in, like, Nishichofu, like, back in the day, I used to go to, like, Style E shows, like, in this basement,
in West Chofu.
We just ran out of this tiny basement in a gym in Nishichofu, and, You know, you would go to one of those shows and there would be like 15 people there in the audience. I've been to shows where the audience was outnumbered by the wrestlers and the ring staff and stuff taking part, you know, and it's just like, but you know, all, like, you know, some of like, you know, the really tiny indie shows I went to back in the day in that basement were all fun. So it was Style E and Ganko Pro. I think Ganko Pro is technically still a thing, but they I don't know if they've actually run any shows in a while. I don't know what's happened to those guys, but that was like a seriously tiny indie show, but again, like, super fun time. And yeah, like, I mean, sometimes you would get some really surprising people taking part in these shows, you know, especially like if you think about where these people are now, you know. So like, yeah, I saw a lot of really amazing stuff back in the day, and like, I really wish I'd had a camera at the time, because I didn't, and it was very sad. But yeah, I mean, definitely like, support your local indies, guys. You know, it's totally worth it.
Yes. Support the indies, definitely. So yeah, let's close the door on show of the year. Open the door on best bout match of the year. Michelle, we just continue with you. What's your number one match in 2022?
Oof. I mean, again, just narrowing it down to just one is hard. And, like, you know, so there's a couple of matches that I thought, like, you know, I would definitely be up there. And it's also, like, recency bias is a thing. So I'm still really high off yesterday's GAMPRO main event, which was spectacular. Like, everyone needs to go watch that right now. So, yeah, again, please watch GAMPRO, guys. And see, there's also, like, Higuchi. Like, Kazusada Higuchi had some really amazing matches this year. Particularly, his standout ones for me being his match against Yoshimura, you know, who, like, you know, it's, that was emotional just because, you know, of course, it's his partner and someone he has a lot of respect for. And but they both wanted the same thing. You know, they both wanted a championship so badly, and, you know, they basically, you know, they had no choice in a way. Very sad. But they still put everything they had into that match, and it just came out like, amazing. And then later on, we had Higuchi versus Yukio Sakaguchi. Again, a lot of history in there because Higuchi just fresh off leaving Eruption. And of course, Sakaguchi being like the guy who pushed him so much while he was in Eruption and everything. And again, just like a very, very powerful match. It's like, I wasn't really, and I know it sounds terrible, I wasn't expecting Sakaguchi to win, of course. I kind of thought from the beginning, yeah, there's no way Higuchi's losing this one, because that would undo like a lot of his character development. So in a way, the outcome was like, it was kind of predictable, but it was predictable in a very satisfying way, yeah. You know, so it did, but it didn't diminish, it didn't diminish Sakaguchi either, you know, because they both came out of that looking amazing. So regardless of the result,
I think the main
that
point
was very special.
Yeah, the main point of that was that both after that match could like go in different directions and just close the chapter that they had before together.
Yeah, it was a really like, it was like the perfect way to do that. It was just really, really good closure, and you know, I think that was just a very well booked match. I mean, like, and it was just a really wonderful thing to watch. Seriously, same going for again. Here's another GAMPRO match. I'm sure you're surprised. So Ken Oka versus Yumihito Imanari. Okay, actual literal crying. You know, I mean, GAMPRO's known for its it is a kind of company that can evoke a lot of emotions because of the connections that it makes with its fans, and just the way that they tell their stories and the way they build up their relationships with each other within the company. And it's like, you know, like, you, I mean, it's like, it's not unusual to be very emotional at more or less any GAMPRO main event, but like Wrestle Sekigahara's main event, it was the biggest stage GAMPRO have really had for themselves, that they created themselves, and they had their entire show there, and it just ended in the best possible way they could have ended that show. You know, that was you know, that was a very special moment for them, I think. Yeah. Plus the posters and that for that show were absolutely incredible, with like Oka and Imanari and the samurai armor and everything.
Yeah.
Like, I want more of that, please. That was amazing.
Tremendous, yes. Some cool picks on your part, Michelle. We're going to throw it to Dylan. Dylan, best match, best bout of the year for you.
Yeah, this is one where there's a lot of different choices to pick from in a good way. I think, again, I've kind of said, I think a lot of people may have a negative vision of wrestling in 2022 in Japan, perhaps. But I think the one thing you can't criticize is match quality and the strength of the wrestlers and the passion of the wrestlers in a lot of ways. Even in a company like Noah, that's the one thing you could always hang your hat on with them, as I think you could point to a lot of great matches. I mean, to me, Hideki versus Katsuhiro Nakajima in April was an amazing match. Hideki Suzuki versus Kaito in the N1 final. That was a great cap off to a wonderful tournament. You know, that's another thing. It felt like they were getting some momentum. I think that those are great matches everybody should check out, especially because Hideki, to me, is one of the best at making everything feel earned in a match, and is a very unique style of wrestler these days. But my top three, I think we have to go in. There was one match that definitely got a good amount of votes. That has to be Fujita Junior Hayato versus Musashi. You mentioned him earlier.
Yes.
From July 1st. Junior winning the title, the Tohaku title from Impro. I think that was an amazing match. And like, I think everybody will have that emotional reaction just because it was such an amazing thing for him to even return to the ring in the first place. But he's also a completely awesome wrestler on top of it. That still is. We have to remember that part as well. So I think we saw that, and I just thought that was a tremendous match to me, and one that everybody should watch. My number two pick was from Stardom in the 5-Star Grand Prix, and that was Suzu Suzuki versus Mirai. I think one of the absolute best worked matches of the whole year, and one of the absolute best performed finishing stretches of the year as well, with Mirai's amazing counter. And I just thought that was an unbelievably great match. One that a lot of people talked about as one of the best of a very long tournament. You know, you kind of mentioned and alluded to that earlier, but to me, I thought that was a match that clearly stood out. It was among the best in any promotion. I love that match to death. It was such an amazing match, and it came out of nowhere. I mean, it didn't come out of nowhere because they're awesome wrestlers, but it reached a level even I didn't particularly expect of it, especially by the end. But for me personally, again, I was talking to me and Michelle were talking a little bit off the air about this. I always say that wrestling, I always say stuff like wins and losses, titles and wins and all that stuff, that is secondary to what's really important, which is almost like a microcosm of life, in my opinion. Not to get philosophical on everybody right now, but success and failure, winning and losing, that's not as important as how you make people feel. And that's really what I go on. And I always say this, I'm not one of these guys that has this long spreadsheet of matches. I mean, you know, cage matches there, we can research different stuff. And this show is a great avenue to look at a lot of matches that were big matches. But when I look at matches, especially at the year end, to me, the matches that stand out the most to me are the ones that I still remember vividly, that still connect to me emotionally, because there's a lot of great matches in wrestling these days. And that's the thing. You could never count out the amount of great wrestling there is. But a lot of times we can drown in it a lot of times, you know, the 4-star matches type of deal. There's a million of those, you know, if you look around. But to me, I said earlier the best show was the easiest award, but actually this was the real easiest award to me, because it was it's impossible for it not to be this, no matter what would possibly happen. And that was the Tsukushi Haruka retirement match, the drop kickers Tsukushi Haruka and Tsukasa Fujimoto versus Hamako Hoshi and Nanae Takahashi from Ice Ribbon Yokohama Budokan 2 from May 4th, 2022. To me, just an unbelievable send-off. And what felt like, like I said, the emotions of it all were so strong, because Ice Ribbon as a whole has meant so much to me from literally the very beginning of my watching of Japanese wrestling. you know, like that's the promotion or like one of the original promotions I gravitated to. And the one that I definitely followed like live first, just because of the opportunity of it, they were the one that connected with me most. And Tsukushi Haruka meant so much to me. I'm not going to get into my own background and all of that relates to me and all that stuff. When she announced her retirement, I wrote a long stream of consciousness almost on the Patreon, just my feelings on all of that. But the emotions of it all were so good. It was like this unbelievable send-off, ending with her getting carried out, still as the Ice Cross Infinity champion. Fujimoto also will leave, but she will return eventually by all intents and purposes. But still, it felt like the true ending of an era. And as I said, it hasn't, if we're being realistic, it's not like it's been a successful year business-wise or as an analyst or anything like that. But just me as a fan, that's a promotion that will always catch my heart. And that particular match meant so much to me. That's one of the few matches I was genuinely emotionally invested in. Usually I watch things more as with wrestler eye, so to speak. But this one, my emotions got the better of me. And I still have like goosebumps thinking of it. Just everything that it meant. So to me, I didn't get any votes. And I don't know if it'll affect anybody else as much as it did me. But for me personally, again, I totally understand people voting other stuff as their match of the year. But for me personally, it had to be Tsukushi and Tsuka versus Hamako and Nanai.
I love that every once and so often you get these matches that really emotionally take you away, Dylan. And sometimes they just are so great that they wipe away your restless eye. That's just awesome. I love it for it. Great shout out for this match, for the retirement of Tsukushi Haruka. I
still miss her, like, you know, watching her wrestle every day. You know, it's crazy how that happens, but you know, nothing personal, like, you know, trying to live a better life, you know, doing everything she wants to, and, you know, who knows what her goals are or were, but to me, I just think about all those memories of 10 11 12 years ago, you know, watching 19 o'clock pro wrestling. Like, it's unbelievable now, because now a lot of people wrestle as teenagers and stuff. It's as I've grown as an adult and actually not as stupid as I was back then when I actually wrestled. You know, it was so special to see somebody that I thought was like me that started so young. And yeah, just an amazing match, an amazing performance, and so many emotions that go along with it. But that's another one where I feel like, you know, never say never in wrestling. You can never completely write off some kind of comeback or anything like that. But as of now, that feels like a match that, you know, that's one of those that'll stick with me for years to come. I have a good feeling about that.
Awesome. I also have three matches that meant a lot to me emotionally this year. Three of my favorite wrestlers are in these matches. But first off, I want to mention some others that I didn't pick from a top three. First, from Ganbare Pro's May 3rd show. Keisuke Ishii and Koki Iwasaki versus Shinichiro Tominaga and Mitsuki Watase. I think one of the greatest underrated tag matches this year. Mm-hmm. Then I have Kaito Kimiya versus Itiki Suzuki from September 3, Pro Wrestling Noah final of the N1. Didn't mention that as well. An underrated indie gem was the second meeting between Hikaru Sato and Keita Yano on September 19. Amazing, almost 30-minute technical exchange between these two. One of the greatest underdog stories of the year was Jackie Faki Kamai and Yuti winning the Open the Twin Gate title from Shun Skywalker and Diamante at Kobe World on July 30. Almost made my top three. I just loved that tag match. But those matches that made my top three, first El Desperado versus Jun Kasai from September 12th. One of those matches that immediately caught on fire online once it happened, and I think the magic of it was transported mostly due to the translation of the post-match part of the match. But already inside, during the match, you could really see how much it meant to Desperado to be able to do this match with Jun Kasai, and they went to incredible lengths to put on an awesome performance in this main event. And I was so happy also for Desperado that he got to do what he apparently loves and what he apparently wanted to do. My number two is a match that Dylan also mentioned. It's Fujita Juna Hayato's return match from cancer. You can't stress that enough. Against Musashi, Currican Hall, one of those really hard-hitting matches that the style that Hayato always went with really embodied. It was all built around never giving up, never shying down, never backing down from a challenge in this match. It also went almost 30 minutes. Just incredible intensity between Musashi and Hayato. And I said it at the time, in Michinoku Pro, there probably was no one else that could have had this match but Musashi with Junior Hayato. Just incredible, incredible stuff. And just the emotional ride of it with Jinsei Shinsaki crying ringside. This was just amazing. And also a match that meant a lot to me because I followed these men's careers very closely. September 25, Katsusada Higuchi versus Konosuke Takeshita. Just this incredible struggle over power between those two. It was really about who is the number one guy in this company. It was the passing of the torch moment that was still needed after Higuchi got the DDT flag a couple of months before. Yeah. Completely incredible, incredible stuff there.
Sure was, yeah.
Yeah, if we go to some of the listeners' votes, I've said it before, we have a lot of different takes, and we also have Jun Kasai and Desperado on top. We have Katsushika Okada versus Will Ospreay, G1 final on number two, and also the Musashi versus Fujita Hayato match on number three. My pick, Higuchi versus Takeshita, made place number four. We also have shoutouts for the Astronauts versus Strong BJ on June 27. Also Kung Fu Masters, just like I mentioned, versus Z-Reds on Kobe World. Lots of different takes from different areas of professional wrestling. One Tsukushi match, Dylan, also made it. It's the Drop Kickers versus Asahi, Hamuku Hoshi, Ibuki Hoshi, Kao Matsushita, Kiku Nao, Ishikawa, Rida Amikura, Saran, Yappi, Yuku Sakurai, and Yuki Mashiro from the April 23 Ice Ribbon Show.
Hey, that's awesome. I mean, that was a lot of fun. That was a very... I mean, there was a lot to that match, like very, very comedic in nature. Yeah, like the tag match gripped me more, but that was a lot of fun. That tag match too, and Yappy getting a shot of love here on the match of the year list or best mount list. So I love that match. That's a lot of fun as well. So great. I like all those picks. Even your pick with Takeshita and Higuchi, that would probably be in my top 10 and probably up there around the top five. I don't think there's any bad matches here among the picks I see.
Yeah. I'm just looking at some of the picks from around our Eastern Laird family. Spadoosh, Yannick also mentions Desperado versus Jun Kasai. Let's see, Sondre has Kairi versus Mayu Iwatani. I know he absolutely loved the match at the time. And Ashutosh, let's see, match of the year, G1 final. Yes, so many different picks here. But we'll Dylan, do you want to say something?
Oh, just... I'll say this too. Shout out to the All Mizuki Battle Royal.
Yes,
as well in there. That was another comedic and fun match as well. You had a Pure J representation here with Arisa Nakajima and Hanako Nakamori versus Miyuki Takase and Rina Yamashita from March 30.
Can't go wrong
March
with 30. That.
No, that was a great match as well. You know, I would say everything, again, all of these matches, I think, were actually either a lot of fun or like really great. So that's great stuff. The only one I would point to that maybe be the bad guy on would be the Endo and Takeshita match, because I always say that I actually think they're like, you know, they're good on their own, and I loved both of their matches with Higuchi. Them with each other never actually works for me. And this is another one that actually didn't work for me either.
Yes, we will continue with you, Dylan, for our next category for best tag team.
Yeah, best tag team. I mean, this was the runaway vote of all the categories in here. And I think this is another one where it's like, you know, you look at the top two and they're the ones that clearly stand out. And number three is kind of like a wild card. You could put any of them on there. And, I mean, there was a lot of great picks, too, among the fans, I would say. Among the tag teams, I think that they they picked a lot of great teams overall. And from a lot of different promotions and places and styles and things like that, you had pretty great representation anywhere. I actually went for my number three. I went with a team that wasn't even didn't get a vote from the listeners, but I went with Galaxy Punch, Saki and Hikari Shimizu, who I think we talked about. Everybody's going to mention the main event on the Wrestling Kingdom show, but don't be surprised. I mean, like you said, this is probably already aired by the time this comes out, but let it be a time capsule. If Hikari Shimizu and Azumi tear the house down and that becomes like a match of the year level match, it would not surprise me. And I think they've done a great things on the indies. I think Saki really brings her all when she's representing colors everywhere. But to me, the clear top two were, again, the Astronauts, Fuminori Abe and Takuya Nomura, and Fukuoka Double Crazy, and Hazuki and Koguma. Now, here's the thing, and I went with Fukuoka Double Crazy. I love the Astronauts. I think they're amazingly talented, both of them. We have for years. Everybody knows that, you know, you'd have to be insane or something to think that they're not talented. I think them in Big Japan suffers from a lot of the problems of Big Japan, in my opinion, in that even the stuff that's good, and even some stuff that's great, is stuff that we've seen before and probably done better in the past. And that's kind of how I felt about a lot of their big matches. There was some stuff that I thought was great because they're awesome wrestlers, and I love them. But for me, I would say Fukuoka Double Crazy, FWC, they were a breath of fresh air to the division, constantly in the camp of the Stardom Tag Division. A division that's actually been very underrated, in my opinion, the last couple of years. You had stuff with, like, Mayhem-A in the past. Momo AZ was a great team as well that unfortunately had to break up. But these two, something about them together and seeing how well they played off each other, just as a true team, they were the team that I enjoyed the most and had the most fun with. So I went with Hazuki and Koguma, but the Astronauts are a fine pick for anyone that would pick them, and they deserve to win the Tag Team Year Award. But for me, I thought they were the fresher team, FWC.
Yes, so I mentioned there's teams that always get mentioned, and one of those teams, I think that they also had a great run in the New Japan Tag League, once again winning. It's, of course, Bishamon. They always are a go-to when it comes to best tag team, also voted by the listeners. I got to say, I really also loved Fukuoka Double Crazy. Those was one of the tag teams that I cared for the most when I watched Stardom. That's also up here in my voting, much like the team of Chihiro Hashimoto and Yu. I really like them. I tend to watch these smaller Sendai Girls shows very often, and I always get very entertained by their performances. And they also had this great six-man tag match recently at All Japan, where they teamed with Shuji Ishikawa against Zuwama, Maya Yuki, and Mayumi Osaki, which was so absolutely funny. Crazy. So I want to give a shout-out to Team 200 Kilogram as well. Which brings me to my top three. I will say that Astronauts, once again, had a tremendous year. They are always one of those teams, much like Bishamon, that get mentioned a lot. I feel like this has been a year where tag team wrestling hasn't been so present, or a great tag team run hasn't been so present, which is why a lot of people fell back to what they voted for in years past and just voted for a solid pick there with the Astronauts. But I actually got two different teams that I personally enjoyed more this year. They probably both haven't had the great run they would have deserved, but just from my personal perspective, I absolutely love the Calamari Drunken Kings. I put them on my number two. I've seen them live at the WXW Tag Tournament this year, tremendous matches. I've seen them in DDT. They had this brief run with the KOD title. They have this still the run with the Asia Dream Tag title. I just love these two together. That's why I put them there. And my number one tag team, their run got cut off once by losing the title prematurely and once by Shotaro Ashino getting injured. Still, though, from their feud at the beginning of the year in March to them becoming a tag team and developing this great tag team chemistry, They also continued that in the Real World Tag League, where Ashino unfortunately got injured. Those two, Shotaro Ashino and Riku Honda, in my opinion, were the shining light in All Japan Pro Wrestling this year, except for, of course, Kento Miyahara on top. These two always delivered whenever they got the opportunity to. And it's very unfortunate that their run got cut off short, which is why I think they didn't get a lot of votes either from the listeners nor you, Dylan and Michelle. But I just wanted to shout out them because they made All Japan watchable in most parts of the second half of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, All Japan's had an interesting year, haven't they? Yeah. I mean, questionable booking aside, I mean, it's just like we got so much talent in there, and it's just like we just need to figure out what they want to do with it. They need to, like, you know, some sensible booking would help, you know.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, it is genuinely frustrating sometimes. But I mean, they're still quite entertaining for the most part, and I enjoy going to their shows and stuff, but there are some matches where, even when I'm attending live, I kind of wish I could just sort of fast forward it in my mind and just be like, can we skip this? Can we? Okay, let's go. Next match.
How many of those matches involved Yoshitatsu?
No. Yeah, God bless. I mean, it's not like they can't book well because, they occasionally have some, we occasionally do some decent booking, but it's just like, you know, they need to do more of that, you know, and less of the other stuff. Just, I know it sounds obvious, but they still haven't figured it out yet. Just, come on, lads, get your finger out.
Yeah. Well,
so, best tag team then, yeah?
Yes.
Okay, so I've actually been really enjoying Aijin Tag in Pro Wrestling Basara this year. Takato Nakano and Masato Kamino, because they just, I mean, it seems very obvious, but they have just amazing chemistry together. Like, they complement each other very, very well. And, they're both sweethearts. I mean, like, even their social media is just them doing stuff together most of the time, you know? And it's just, you know, it's just really nice to see that kind of synergy, you know, because you get to see, like, how they get on well, so well with each other outside of a ring and how they work well together in the ring as well. And it's just, it's always just a joy to watch those guys wrestle, you know, like, whether they're in the team or even just, like, you know, as singles competitors as well, they're both really great wrestlers. So, and, like, they had, like, a little run with the Iron Fist Tag Championship. Unfortunately, they lost those quite recently. Yeah, but I always enjoy watching them. And I just hope they stay together for as long as possible. Because, like, they're just lovely, you know. They're like a comfort watch. But, you know, I always feel better having watched one of their matches. You know, I really enjoy them. You know, I appreciate them a lot.
Really glad that Masato Kamino is getting more of a chance in great now, teaming with Takanori Ito there. He's really a guy that we should also look forward to in next year.
And they were
definitely should have more eyes on him, absolutely. I really hope Nakano also gets some opportunities outside of Basara as well. I mean, I love pro wrestling Basara, but it's such a pain in the bum to watch, like, if you're not actually at the show, because, like, it means, well, you have to watch it on Nico Pro. And, it's not always the easiest thing to do. You know, like, sometimes, like, life just gets in the way and you can't watch it live or you can't catch it while it's available on demand. And it's just, like, I really wish there was, like, a more reliable, like, archive of Pro Wrestling Basara so more people could watch it more easily.
Yep.
You know, like, I mean, that was one of the things I was, like, most concerned about, like, when Basara went independent from a DDT group. Yeah, you because know, like you know,
yes,
it was
and
just
deservedly
I mean,
so.
It was just much more convenient. You know, I mean, could you imagine having Ambassador on Wrestle Universe now with everyone else? I mean, that would be amazing. You know, I would love that. And I appreciate, you know, Isami's reasoning for making that decision. At the same time, it's just like it's almost like it's making Pro Wrestling Ambassador almost like Japan exclusive. In a way, because it is quite difficult to watch, like, unless you happen to be available to watch it, like, while it's around.
I'm sure they could have had the chance to become what Ganbare Pro is now.
Yeah.
Being available to more international fans, and Basara just is not anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, I kind of feel like Basara could be doing so much better than they are, and it's not because of anything they're necessarily doing wrong, but it's more like I kind of feel like they missed the boat, you know, with the whole Wrestle Universe thing. It's like I appreciate why Isumi felt the need to do that, but at the same time, from a fan perspective, it wasn't necessarily the right call.
No.
You know, like, I really would like more people to be able to get into Basara more consistently. But, well, time will tell, you know. Like, I mean, hope maybe in the future there might be an easier way to watch it. But for now, we just gotta, you know, struggle for the time being. But, you know, there's so many guys in Basara who definitely deserve more eyes on them. And I really hope that happens soon.
Right.
Yeah.
Good. Conclusion.
And I also enjoy the pheromones because but
sure.
Sorry, had to get that in there.
Expected no less. Yes. Yeah, we'll continue with you, Michelle, for best wrestler.
Okay, so this is going to be one of those ones where I'm going to feel a bit silly because it kind of feels like the obvious answer, but Konosuke Takeshita. Because, like, I mean, of course, like, you know, he's just, you know, like, he's making the world fall in love with him, you know, finally. And I think, like, it's, you know, it's such a good thing for his career. Like, I would hope that his popularity would lead to more eyes on DDT as a whole. Like, I'm not sure exactly that's what's happening, because it seems like a lot of AEW fans of Takeshita are only really watching him on AEW. But, like, hopefully it does, like, you know, result on getting more eyes on DDT, like, going forward. You know, because, like, you know, that benefits everyone, basically. But, yeah, I mean, Takeshita's just a joy to watch. You know, like, you always know, like, you're going to get something special from him. And you're always going to get, like, amazing performances, no matter what kind of match you put him in. You know, so, like, I think, yeah, let's go for that. Like, I mean, I think he would easily be my pick for best wrestler for this year. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm just trying to think, like, but the thing is, like, I'm not sure anybody else who, like, especially stands out as, like, you know, the whole package kind of thing, like, you know, in terms of not only, like, in-ring performance and, you know, connection with the audience and, like, popularity and stuff like that, but, like, it's so many things that a best wrestler could be. You know, like, what I think a best wrestler is probably, you know, there's a lot of wrestlers who I really love that other people will think are crap, to be honest. But, you know, it kind of really depends on what metrics you're kind of, you know, doing you know, best wrestler on.
We'll just always differentiate between best wrestler and MVP. Sometimes those get confused in our voting as well, but... Yeah,
because I mean Takeshita would be a strong candidate for MVP as well, because he has done so well this year, but he's done that well this year because he's that good of a wrestler. There's going to be a lot of crossover there, yeah?
And not in DDT most of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My picks, I thought about that long and hard, actually. My number one was pretty clear from the get-go. My number one is Katsusada Higuchi. Mm-hmm. People know I love him. I've always loved him. I've seen him grow and finally becoming champion. I think all of his title matches, you mentioned the Sakaguchi one, all of his title matches have been amazing. And I mentioned the Takeshita one. The guy has completely come to his own. Whatever he does is a great match. In his tag team with Naomi Yoshimura, great matches there, all over the board. Got a lot of votes from the listeners as well. Is the best wrestler according to our listeners as well. So, no, there was no question for me to put this guy up there. Then I'm just looking at it, but I think nobody actually voted for him.
Mm-hmm.
My number two is Hideki Suzuki. I think that not only in Pro Wrestling Noah, But also, he wrestles in a 10-year project as well. And he has had a great match with Keita Yano there, too. So Keita Yano gets a lot of representation. A cool tag match also, Hideki and Takeda against Jun Kasai and Dan Tamura in October. But also his Noah matches, the one with Kaito Kiyomiya we mentioned. Dylan, I think you mentioned the one with Nakajima in April, too, right?
That's right.
That was great. The one with Shiozaki in August was cool. The one with Kano as well. So lots of great matches by Hideki Suzuki and everything else. He's just this complete wrestler when it comes to his style of wrestling, but it can also go in different other routes. So Hideki Suzuki, definitely an amazing utility player in pro wrestling Noah and elsewhere as well, being this freelance guy that wrestles everywhere and basically puts on great matches wherever he goes. And my number three is the reigning Open the Dream Gate champion Yuki Yoshioka, just going through his title run, the matches that he had this year in this run. Predominantly the one with Masaki Mochizuki was amazing. I love the one with Benkei at Final Gate. He has become this guy that carries the Dream Gate title with such confidence and puts out lots of different matches. He also had this tag run with Dragon Dyer at the beginning of the year as the Open the Twin Gate champion. Also great matches there. So, yeah, that is my top three. And from there, we go to Dylan.
Yeah, you know, I had my three in place heading into this. But today, when I was putting together all of these lists and going through all of this, and I really started to think about it when I saw a lot of people listed and things like that. I originally had Yoshioka in my top three, but I decided against it because I had a change all around, really. I moved everything around. I really thought about the year and what this award means. Really, the best wrestler is kind of like the in-ring type of guy compared to MVP. So I voted for my number three, my shout out here for the in-ring performer, my number three, has to go to Mirai to put her haters further in the mud and to end the year. I cannot let it go. I will never change, and she will never change. There's not that many of them left these days, but still, I will never let it go, as I said. So I have to mention Mirai. And I think she's been an awesome wrestler as well, to be honest with you, just in-ring with her. We'll talk about her some more with Joshi MVP, but I think that her in-ring has really been what's carried her more than anything else. My number two is the same as yours, actually, Hideki Suzuki. For all the same reasons you mentioned and all the matches I mentioned before, he's just awesome everywhere he goes. Everything he does is pretty much great. Even the tag team, I think that they really left a lot of the table with him and Thatcher as a tag team. That's something I hope that they get back to in the near future, because I think that they can add a lot to the tag team division there. But anything he does, any kind of singles role he's had, I think that he is really among the best at it. He showed it to Noah that he was the class of the company, in a company that has a lot of strong wrestlers, to be fair. I still think he was the best one. And like you said, anywhere he goes. To me, my number one was Hikaru Sato. I didn't mention him for most underrated, but instead I mentioned him for the best in-ring performer. Because the same thing. I think the first part of his year was really focused a lot on All Japan. With that great title reign that he had with the junior title. It was one of those that didn't last forever. Yeah, he had a few months with it, but it was still really good. And then the second half was something where he did a lot of different things, whether it was your YMZ work, whether it was a hard hit. I watched matches of his with Sumo Watanabe last month. He's Tenryu Project as well. Tenryu Project's getting a lot of love on this show right now. Yeah, like I said, we're seeing a lot of Tenryu Project on the show. But the match.
He had the match with Naoya Nomura at the Legacy Show, Nippon Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame show on October 10.
Yeah, that was a really good one. You see him everywhere. He faced Keita Yano, as you mentioned before. And even the stuff he did later on in the tournament they had. I mean, it was a small Junior Battle of Glory, but he had a lot of the best matches in them. So I think all around, everything they did, they had the really good All-Asia tag title match, too, at Budokan as well. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a nice crowning moment for him and Dan. That's another title reign they got cut pretty far short overall. But let's just remember this, that Sato did get a win over Suwama, technically, this year as well. So I think with it all considered, it's like I said, it's a long journey. We've got here a lot of different moving parts, a lot of different matches. But by the end, I settled on Sato as my wrestler of the year in the ring.
Yes, I can't fault you for that because you just laid it down. Sato is just an amazing wrestler. That's the end of it. And I'm still surprised that Higuchi won with so many votes over Osprey and Okada. That really surprised me. Osprey is a second by the listeners, and Okada made place number three, while Kaito Kiyomiya came in fourth, and Yuji Kobayashi came in fifth. Not a lot of love for Shuri, for example. Only two votes. Mike Bailey, did he even have a match in Japan this year? I'm not sure. I don't think he had.
Listen,
we're not going to disrespect the legacy of Impact Wrestling on this show.
Well, okay, if you say so. but that's what the listeners voted for. I guess we continue because we've been going long. We continue with best moment, and I'll start with this one. Number three for my best moment of the year is Hana Kimura Bogus, the main event, basically Kyoko Kimura wrestling Jungle Kiona. Amazing emotional moment for, I guess, everybody involved, but mostly for these two women in the match. Just incredible. You mentioned it at your show of the year, Dylan. Two honorable mentions that I want to make. Shibata versus Renarita from January 4 was a great moment, as well as the entire Kanis retirement in April of this year in Dragon Gate. Then my two top moments. First, Katsu Sadaiguchi waving DDT's flag. That was such a cool moment. He just got this flag and he waved it. He was just like this little kid finally achieving what he always wanted to have. This was just so cool to see. But nothing, in my opinion, beats Fujita Junior Hayato's return from cancer. He was so emotional after the match. He cried so many tears and, of course, deservedly so. He just won the title. He just returned from this life-threatening illness. And nobody really thought that he would ever do that. I mean, he always said that he would. But, I mean, come on. It was a really, really hard and grueling cancer disease that he had. I followed that throughout the years and followed the surgeries that were reported on. And it really didn't look good for him.
I'll never forget the picture we saw a few years ago when he made his, this was years ago now, when he walked out and he was still so frail at that point. And I know a lot of people were like, oh, they couldn't believe it. When I saw that picture, I knew he would come back.
Yeah.
Because to me, that was fighting spirit. Like, I know it looked bad and it was bad. But to me, that showed me everything that I needed to know, that he loved this so much that he would fight through it somehow. Like, I really believe that, honestly. Like, when I saw him walk out like that, I always thought that. And you can look at my history. I'm always on the side of the wrestlers will always come back because I understand how much it means to him. And to see him come out, like, even those years ago when his bottom, like, you know, the worst he probably felt, like some of the worst times he probably felt, he still couldn't get away from wrestling.
No, he came to the ring in a wheelchair. He always was around wrestling.
Yeah, and so I honestly really thought in my heart that he would find some way to come back, and that was an unbelievable moment, to say the least. To see it finally happen and just so amazing. You know, it's one of those things where I always believe it, but you never really believe it until it happens, you know? So it's like, you always, maybe it's wishful thinking on my part, but I really was happy to see that. That was such a cool moment.
Yes. Yeah, Michelle, what do you have for this one?
Okay, we've already had like a couple of ones like from my list, so like especially like Higuchi and the flag and everything. That was like just a really like emotional time, like, you know, because seeing him at the top of DDT, his hard work paying off and everything is just, that was just a wonderful thing to see. And also, like, at the actual show, the fans were allowed to hold the flag themselves. So I have a couple of pictures of me waving that flag, too. Yeah. Yeah, so that was really fun, actually. I mean, a flag's actually pretty bloody hard to hold, you know? Like, keeping your balance with that thing is actually quite difficult. But, you know, he's a big lad. He can handle it. I'm not as strong as he is. So I was just like, oh, my goodness, what am I doing? With the thing, you know? Well, I looked okay in the pics. I'm okay. Let's see. Apart from that, now, I know recency bias is always a bit of an issue with stuff like this, but so yesterday at Ganbare Pro Wrestling, Mizuki Watase finally standing at the top of Ganpro, like in a prominent position with a belt. Something which is like, you know, it's just like a culmination of like, basically, all his struggles and frustration and all the effort that he's put into his career as a wrestler. Because, like I say, like, you know, he's one of those guys who's basically very underappreciated generally, not only essentially by a lot of fans, but also by the wrestling industry in general. You know, it seems that way. You know, it always just seemed like he never got the recognition he really deserved. But now that he is a champion of Ganpro, like, it definitely seems like it's something that he has deserved for a long time, and he finally got it. And it also marks, you know, like, hopefully what will be, like, you know, an era of his wrestling career, which will get more eyes on him and will get him more supporters because, well, hope, you know, it's something, again, it's something he deserves, you know, like the amount of like, sheer hard work and passion that he puts into all of his matches. It was actually just really heartwarming to see him finally standing at the center of attention, you know, with that kind of achievement. You know, it was a very happily like emotional time, you know, just seeing all that going down. I was just, yeah, it was great. You know, that was definitely one of my favorite things of the year. I mean, it's been quite a lot of interesting stuff happening. I mean, I was at Cyber Fight Fest as well when Keiji Muto walked out and just went, well, I'm retiring, see yous. And then he just walked back out. And it's just like, you know, he didn't even like stick around to make it like a big, long emotional speech or anything. It was literally walk out, get in the ring. Hello, everyone. How are you doing? Hope you're enjoying the show. By the way, I'm retiring. Bye. See you, peeps. And then just like, oh, you peace out, get out of there. And so, like, okay, yeah, that's the way to do it. I mean, it's not like that didn't really come as a shock or anything, I don't think. I mean, I think it's something that people have been anticipating for quite some time, but at the same time, it was still kind of surprising just to just see him kind of walk out and just almost casually mention he was retiring, you know? So yeah, that was kind of a fun thing to watch. I'm just trying to like, yeah, it was like a lot of cool stuff happened this year, but yeah, those two definitely stick out. Yeah.
Nice. Before we go to Dylan, I just remembered one more moment that I definitely have to get in here. Masashi Takeda. Mm. At the beginning of the year, he took a hiatus because of his wife passing away suddenly.
Yeah.
And he obviously has this little daughter he had to take care for. But then he made his return in July, much like Fujita. He made his return in July to Freedoms with his daughter in attendance while he was having this grueling Light Tubes death match and his little girl was watching on. But this was just a great moment for him being able to do what he loves again in front of his loved one, I guess.
Oh.
Yes.
Bless.
Okay. Dylan.
Yeah.
To be honest, there's been so many amazing moments throughout the year. Mm. I think this is another one where, like I said, you could say what you want about the year in Japan, but nobody could question the amount of this category. That's why we had so many different ones. I think that really got to people. To me, the number three moment for me would have to be Jun Kasai and Desperado after their match. You know, they did one match of the year, but I honestly think the promo afterwards was what really won it more than anything that Jun Kasai said, just because, again, this is something that goes, all three of my moments go beyond wrestling per se or any kind of story. These are all real life type of deals. And the stuff he was saying to Desperado, I mean, that to me was an unbelievable promo. Just like what he said, I'm not going to recap it all. You know, I'm sure that the translation of stuff is still on Twitter. You can look it up and online and stuff. But the words he said was powerful for anybody, not just Desperado, but to all the people out there. I think could live through a lot through what he was saying and his words. And like I said, you know, especially with me, with a lot of my trials and tribulations and stuff, you know, a lot of that stuff, you know, you could see Desperado's feelings, and I was feeling the same stuff that he was feeling, and it was an emotional thing. You know, one of the absolute most heartfelt moments of the year, I would say, would be that speech that Kasai gave Desperado, and even Desperado's reaction to it was very similar. That I could feel myself in his shoes, how he reacted to it, and I totally felt the same way. To me, there really is no wrong answer between the top two, in my opinion, but the only reason I would pick the Jungle and Kyoko thing over the Fujita thing, and again, these are both fantastic, amazing moments, not just in wrestling, but of the human will, is that Fujita's return was already announced to go for the title. The way that it was set up with Kyoko and Jungle, it wasn't actually the main event. It happened in the middle of the show and was basically literally just, it felt like it was on the fly. I mean, who knows if they put something together, but basically it was like Jungle requested Kyoko, and keep in mind, Kyoko herself is one of the underrated Joshi wrestlers. That's everyone, right? Talks about Hana, yeah. But Kyoko was around for years and years and doing great things. But she's been gone for so long in wrestling. Jungle, obviously, I mean, two very traumatic figures or tragic figures in wrestling. You know, the mother of the daughter that she lost, and her best friend who found her. You know, like this amazing thing, that just amazing trauma that these two have somehow. And perhaps, again, much like we were talking about with Fujita, I really feel like I feel like wrestling really was able to give him that drive to overcome his cancer that he had. That heart and that will that he had was so strong, and I think wrestling really brought him there. You mentioned Takeda. That's another big moment there, which I think was totally up there. Wrestling really showed a lot of his heart that he had. Overall, and like that helped him on. You said his daughter was in the crowd watching him. That's something they could share together forever. That's an amazing moment. Kyoko and Jungle in a darker, you know, world or different ways. Things could have been so terrible for them, and how they were able to move along. But this match, just it coming out of nowhere, that was a moment that I never ever expected to happen. You know, and on the show, and then it did, and it was like this unbelievable thing. Again, that's something I'll never forget. For sure, with how it came across and how it came about. The Fujita thing, I definitely think is like a more than worthy, an amazing moment, and that man has so much respect for me for able to overcome what he did to get back into wrestling, this thing that he loves, the thing that keeps him going. And it just shows you, all of these moments to me show us all how special pro wrestling is, yes, and can be to everybody. And I think that's the big thing. There really is no wrong answer between any of these. But the biggest reaction, the most visceral reaction to me was the Jungle and Kyoko thing. So that would be my number one.
Yes, that was really powerful, definitely. Great moments this year. It's been definitely a year for these emotional rides. Now our top two categories, Yoshi MVP and MVP. Dylan, we'll start with you for Yoshi MVP.
Now, this one was really hard for me, to be honest with you.
Oh, got it. Yes, I went back and forth, and I'm still not sure if I really am correct with this one. Yeah, it was hard, yeah.
The problem, because to me, the obvious answer is Shuri.
Yeah.
Being the red belt champion for the year. But the way we always look at MVP is who meant the most to their company. Mm-hmm. And the problem with her and anyone in Stardom is that their year was so strong and their roster so strong. There are so many amazing wrestlers on there. It's hard to say one particularly. You know, if she had retired after winning the belt last year, mm-hmm. you know, just knock on wood or whatever, I feel like someone else would have taken that spot and done a fantastic job as well, because they have so they there's like a wealth of options. She, but the fact of the matter is, she did it. She was the one that was the red belt champion. And her company was the best company. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that has to weigh heavily in these, because I feel like a lot of times, you know, because in the real sports MVPs, you know, it's hard for me to say, or it's hard for somebody to vote for somebody like an Ohtani, in, if you're a baseball fan, on the Angels, not Shinjiro, but the Shohei Ohtani on the Angels. Like, he's a wonderful player, the best in the game. I think most people would agree. Either him or his teammate Mike Trout. But the problem is that he's on a losing team. So it's hard to say, oh, he's an MVP when, you know, you could lose with him or you could lose without him, you know, pretty much. And in this case, with Shuri, it's the opposite, where it feels like they would still win even if she wasn't there. But she was there and she did a fantastic job. So she has to be up there.
And also, to give more arguments to that one, she also is in the main storyline that culminates at the end of the year. So, of course, you can say if she hadn't been there, someone else would have taken that. But that storyline didn't just start this year. It started before. It was rooted in them being in the same unit. So Shuri being part of Julia's journey, I think, was very integral.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that last year, her journey was the focus. Like, Shuri's journey herself was the focus of Stardom. And that's right. Why I voted for MVP last year as well. I would like to shout out Hiroyo Matsumoto as well. Once again, reclaiming her longtime gimmick of going after lots of titles, which we've seen in 2022. I also think Hanako Nakamori is a totally worthy MVP candidate. Someone very strong in the world of Pure J. At that promotion, and they really need somebody like her. Hiroyo obviously working a lot in Ozzy Academy, Seedling, and places like that. Like I said, I really going back and forth on it, but I think I'm gonna have to go with house rules here. Pretty much, I think Shuri Kondo has to be my pick.
Yeah, it's really not easy this year. Let me ask you this, Dylan. I think I didn't see a lot of people or anyone vote for it. I gotta go through this right now. Yes, one person actually voted. How do you feel about Kairi?
The problem with her is that she didn't wrestle that much.
That's the problem. But she's the first IWGP Women's Champion.
That may be bigger next year, depending on how things play out. I would argue. I mean, that was a great moment and a wonderful show. But that doesn't make a whole year.
I agree with you, but definitely there was someone that thought about her.
I always say it's like similar to Hideki, someone in the men's version. If you just go by batting average, you know, so to speak, again, not to bring up more baseball references, but like match percentage wise, all of her stuff she was awesome in and one of the best wrestlers. So if you just go by everything she did was great, so she's an MVP candidate. That makes sense. But again, that's why I wouldn't vote for her, is just because I don't think there's enough there compared to us. Like somebody like Shuri.
Yes. Let's see what Michelle has here.
Okay, well, to be honest, I haven't watched quite as much Joshi this year as maybe I usually do. I haven't even seen that much from Tokyo Joshi Pro this year because of various reasons, and also because of that, you know, the project I've been working on this year. We'll learn more about that next year. So a lot of the Joshi wrestlers I've seen this year have been mostly active in men's promotions, essentially. Mm-hmm. But of course, I'm going to bring a conversation back around to Ganpro, because that's basically the theme of today's recording. I want to put Yuna Manase forward for that, for Joshi MVP, because...
Great call.
Not only has she been doing a lot of good stuff this year, for herself, as a wrestler and as for her in-ring performance and everything like that, but she's also so supportive of the other women wrestlers in GAMPRO and GAMBARU Joshi Pro. particularly Yuri, so Yuri had quite a tough time of it. She lost a lot of her matches and stuff like that. I think she only even had her first victory in Gampro quite recently. But Yuna was always there in her corner, being very, very vocally supportive and pushing. And she's like that with everyone, She's always so supportive of everyone and literally in everybody's corner, cheering them on and just trying to encourage everyone, to put everything they have into it and trying to give them more encouragement and motivation when they need it.
Great match with Hartley Jackson.
Yeah, that was incredible. It's just, it has been such a good year for Gunpro in particular. And I really feel a big part of that was because of Yuna's influence on the other wrestlers, I think she is a big part of that whole positive atmosphere that you get from Gunpro. She basically wants everybody to be at the top of their game, and she tries to support everyone as much as she can. And I think that's a really wonderful thing to see. Because all too often in wrestling, you get guys who are basically just in it for themselves in a way. It's all about how popular they can be, how they can get themselves over, how they can be the one that everybody looks at. But, Yuna also has goals for herself, of course, but, she's not selfish about it, She wants everyone to be to get to her level so she can basically fight them on an equal playing field,
Yes.
At least that's what it feels like. It's just she's just such a positive figure, and I think she's really admirable, I just love seeing her doing anything, really. She's great.
She is.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm quickly looking at the listeners. They also have Shuri on top, much like I have. I have put her on my number one position. The listeners then have Julia, Suzu Suzuki, Mayu Iwatani, Mio Yamashita, and Choco Nakajima, Arisa Nakajima, and then Shihiro Hashimoto. And Shihiro Hashimoto actually is my number two pick. Mm-hmm. Hashimoto always pops up in my top lists because, Dylan's way of thinking about it, take out Shihiro Hashimoto out of her promotion. That is a significant blow to Sendai Girls, because there really is no one else that is able to carry this company, at least not right now. I'm expecting Mika Iwata to be there at one point, but Shihiro is just such a tremendous talent, it's such a tremendous star for them that she helps put Sendai Girls on the map outside of her company. I mentioned All Japan Pro Wrestling. Recently lost the title to Asuka, in the culmination of their storyline, so that opens her up for different things, I think, next year. Still tag champion, of course. And, Asuka is my number three. You mentioned wrestling in men's groups. Asuka has been in DDT at the beginning of the year, tag title run with Mao. Asuka also is in Sendai Girls, in Seed Ring. I think still tag champion there. And now the Sendai Girls world champion as well. Wherever she is someone that always gets the fans behind her, and I think she's not bound to one company, but she means a lot to the entire Yoshi scene, I would just believe.
Hard to argue that. I feel the same about Hashimoto. I really agree with what you said, that she means so much to Sendai. Kind of a similar thought I had to Nakamori in pretty much. I just think I personally liked Nakamori's year a little bit better in ring, but Hashimoto's, nobody's going to argue with that pick, because she is awesome, true star, great wrestler, very unique style, doing lots of great things in the world of Joshi.
Absolutely. I'm just looking at some more mentions. We got Shia Koishikawa. Of course, when you have Choco Pro, she might be the MVP of Choco Pro. Mirai, Maki Ito, Saya Kamitani, Tam Nakano, Yuka Sakazaki. I mean, Saya Kamitani, Tam Nakano, Mirai, those are not MVP candidates. I mean, not even for stardom, because they haven't been on the top of the company.
Where would we be without Mirai, though, in our lives?
I mean, that is clear. That is clear.
No, but I agree with you. Honestly, the thing is, a lot of people will be very big on Tulsaya overall. So I actually thought that she might get a lot more votes. Mm. To be honest with you, that was one of the more surprise picks. But I'm with you. I would pick Shuri over these others in terms of MVP.
Then let us go to our final category, and I'm very excited to see what we have there. It is the overall MVP, which can include Yoshi MVP, so male or female, who was the most valuable player? Michelle, who is it?
Yeah, this is a tricky one. I mean, there's so many people you could put forward for this one, but I mean, I would say like Anise for DDT, I would definitely put Higuchi forward for MVP for DDT this year, because he's just had such an incredible year, like so many amazing matches, particularly in the second half of the year. But, you know, like, I mean, he's one of these guys who's just consistently amazing to watch, you know, and just, you know, whenever he main events anything, it's just so exciting because you just want to see what he's going to do. You know, because like, he always pulls out something like that's just like visually like incredible, or just something that almost makes you feel pain for his poor opponent, whoever it may be at the time. You know, and I feel like, you know, if DDT are gonna like strap a rocket on anyone and like keep them at the top, I think that you know, he's the guy to do it. I mean, this could all change from tomorrow, in fact, because like a big main event against Yuki Ueno, but you know, I really do think like he should be like, you know, one of the top guys in DDT going forward. I think he's a very valuable asset to them, and you know, I feel like there are a lot of guys coming up through the ranks in DDT right now who will also be amazing in the future and will definitely be strong candidates for MVP in the future. But at right now, I would say, at least for DDT, definitely Higuchi would be the one to call the MVP there. In terms of other promotions, like it definitely seems like a very obvious and easy answer for All Japan, but we mentioned before, like, you know, about Chihiro Hashimoto, like if you took her out of her home promotion, yeah, they would be in kind of a lot of trouble, right? If you took Kento Miyahara out of All Japan Pro Wrestling, yeah. He is necessary for All Japan, and it's like, it's kind of not a great position for them to be in, you know? Like, I mean, I feel like he is definitely MVP of All Japan, but All Japan really need to sort them out themselves out and get more guys into that kind of position, you know? Like, so, you know, someone, you know, because we talk about how DDT at the moment is resting on Kazusada Higuchi's shoulders, but there are other guys who could also fill that role. In All Japan, you know, there aren't, we don't have such a wide variety of people who could reliably fill that role. I mean, there are guys coming up who maybe could, have the potential to do so, but nobody touches Miyahara right now, like, at all. Like, he's, like, you know, in terms of popularity and charisma and everything, like, he's so far ahead of everyone else. You know, and, like, that's, you know, he's a huge draw for All Japan, but it's also a big problem. Like, you know, God forbid, say if he got injured or something like that, or if he chose to jump ship or to go, you know, freelance or something like that, All Japan would be kind of screwed, like, a lot, you know? That would be a really difficult position for them, you know? And it's kind of, I don't want to say precarious, because it doesn't seem like Miyahara is going to go anywhere anytime soon, but they really need to have more guys who, you know, are coming up, you know, close enough behind him that they could reliably take over his role in a way.
That's a big problem, definitely. And I definitely agree with what you said. And at the beginning of the year 2022, he once again was there to save the day after Jake Lee got injured and they had to vacate the Triple Crown. He was once again there to win the belt and take off. Then they got this brief, weird title run of Jake Lee with 25 days as champion. Zuwama took the belt, and then once again, Kento Miyahara.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is just him. That is his role. He's the top guy. And nobody else comes even close.
Yeah,
they fumbled the bag. They fumbled the bag definitely with Yuma Aoyagi this year, and so they are still bound with always relying on Kento Miyahara. That is also why I have him on my number three position. Definitely.
Yeah.
I see few promotions.
I'm very curious what's going to happen on, like, is it a third when he has that match against Takeya Nomura?
Yeah,
because, like, I mean, I'm very curious to see what they're going to do there, because, I mean, potentially if Nomura did beat Miyahara there, that could be good. That could be very good for Big Japan. It makes Big Japan look good.
That is but true, but I definitely see the other Nomura defeating Miyahara.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just like, what would they do next? You know, it's just like a problem with All Japan's booking is that they don't really seem to have a long-term plan, or they don't have like a contingency plan, like if something goes wrong or whatever, or something unexpected happens, like Jake Lee's injury. Like, they don't really have a backup, basically. Yep. And it's like, you know, that is hurting them. You know, that's adding to the whole nonsensical booking thing. And they're really going to have to, like, pull their pants up a bit in 2023, like, if they're going to fix those problems. But, like, it's just, where do you start? You know, it's going to be that's going to be a tough hurdle for them to cross over.
Yes. So that is definitely true. And my number two is my number one for the Yoshi MVP. It's Shuri, for the reasons that we mentioned. I think she's the main character of the one of the biggest companies in the entire country, one of the strongest in 2022, played a great role there, and thus is my number two pick overall. But my number one pick, I can't go with Higuchi for this one, to be quite honest, because the metrics for Higuchi are still just not there. Even though he's the top guy, he isn't doing anything for the company right now. The numbers stayed the same. They are not doing good business right now. DDT is
They had a tough year, I think.
So I really can't give him that, but the listeners voted for him. He's number one. Kento Miyahara is number two, and number three in the listeners votes is Okada, and Katsushika Okada is my number one. In the absence of a champion, Jay White hasn't been there for most of the year. In the absence of a champion, it was Okada's role to lead the company, and it was Okada's role to lead them back to more heights than they had in 2021. And I think that he fulfilled his role tremendously. He is a great guy on top of this promotion, of the most important promotion, and without Okada, they would have a huge problem as well.
Yeah.
Dylan.
Yeah. See, yeah, totally fair, yeah.
Well, I mostly agree with that. What do you mean Jay's not there or hasn't been there?
Well, he hasn't been there a lot this year. Let's see how many matches he had in Japan this year. I mean, he was on one or two tours.
Yeah, I mean, he was on the G1. I guess that kind of that's such a big deal of the thing was the G1. He had that match in October against Tonga, obviously winning the title. I think he's only had like one or two defenses, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Nice. Let's see. This year had 26 matches in Japan.
Yeah, like I said, it's interesting how they use it. But more than match total, I think important matches are more important than anything. You know, it's like who has the most important stuff. I mean, like I said, he was around for the major stuff, I guess, is really where I was coming from. But I don't disagree with Okada either way. That was just something that stood out to me. I was just trying to formulate it in my mind. To me, my number three is Higuchi. Number two is Kento. They both are great and have the same problem, and that I totally agree with what you said, Astriga, where basically, again, to pull our real sports metrics to what I just said again, it's like you're voting for this great player on a team that's not making the playoffs. And that's kind of what I feel like with those two. My number one pick was the Open the Dream Gate champ, Yuki Yoshioka.
Nice.
They definitely are a playoff team in my book with Dragon Gate, the promotion of the year for the men, for sure. And I think he's been a major part of it. It's not just that he's a champion. He's actually directly responsible for a lot of the company being as awesome as it is. It has a lot of great moments to his own right, even to the start of the year, like when he was a part of the tag team with Dragon Daya and DeCourage. I thought that was a major thing. It set him up for greatness. The King of Gate run he had was spectacular. he was the guy to get the title. And ever since he got the title, again, that was really the one hiccup they've had all year was for Kobe World. But ever since he got that title, he's been off to the races and been the catalyst for promotion having a great year. And he's done so many great things with the title that I just think that he is the one that I thought of for this award almost right away. The other two are great in their own ways. I just don't think that the companies have been able to catch up with them around them more or less right now. Hopefully we get there. And I do think it'll get there with Higuchi, especially if they keep plugging away at this. I think that we've seen in times past where Takeshita has been the champion and the fans always come back round for him, so to speak. I think Higuchi is going to get on that level eventually to where the fans really get into him and where he becomes that star.
He's got the star power. It's just a case of cultivating it and in a way sort of making more people care about it, because it's this, I mean, that's always the hardest part of promoting pretty much anything, is like making people care about your product. Like, it doesn't matter how good your product is if nobody cares about it. So it's just, like you say, it's all about bringing people around to him.
And I think people, like his fans that have been around that love him already, really care about him a lot and see that. And I think that's another thing. I think he's got the skill to make that happen. And I think that this match with Ueno is going to go a long way to telling his story going forward, because I think that's on paper is a great match. But but his performance-wise is right up there. That's why, to me, and hey, the fans voted for him as the top vote-getter of it, so I can't disregard him at all. And so I got to give them credit. Kento was right behind him. It was like a photo finish, within a couple
until the last second.
Yeah, well, maybe not the last second, but the last vote, anyway, so to speak, came down to Higuchi getting the win over Kento. So I think both of those two are great. For me, personally, I think that when you look at the overall promotions and what they have surrounding them and the skills they have, Yoshioka would be my pick.
Absolutely. Guys, I really need to wrap this up because this went much longer than I initially thought. I still got some plans.
How long did you think it was going to go?
I figured we would be done in under 3 hours, but here we go. But it was tremendous. I also want to thank all the listeners for all their ballots that gave us a lot to look out for, and just also to maybe to fill out some blind spots that we had this year. So thank you all for your votes. Of course, Dylan, I want to thank you for your insight on your picks and on your perspectives on everything else, just like all the time. But for this show being the last of the year, of course, I want to thank you for your contributions to this podcast.
Well, most importantly, I really got to shout out all the listeners and the fans of the show, just the fans of Japanese wrestling who voted. It gave us a ton of votes on here with a lot of different categories all getting fulfilled. Lots of great picks, lots of under-the-radar picks, some big mainstream ones as well. So you got a lot of different things here. I always love seeing the people's thoughts on things. That's my favorite part of the show. So I really got to give the credit to them, and hopefully all the guys out there, all the guys and girls, in fact, listening to this, hopefully you all really enjoyed the show and enjoyed my contributions, as Striga said. If I could do that and make you guys happy, that's the main goal. Overall. Yes. So thank you guys so much.
Also, of course, Michelle, thank you for your contributions on this show. It was great having you on for the first time. Hope you did feel all right for your second podcast.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, thanks very much. I had a really good time. Thanks for having me on your podcast. Yeah, and thanks to everyone for listening to me yelling about GAMPRO for like a long time. If you ever need me to yell about GAMPRO, DDT, or Shinjuku Nichome Pro Wrestling or anything like that ever again, like, I'd be happy to do that again for y'all. But yeah, thanks for putting up with me for the last couple of hours. It's been great.
It's really been great. So this has been it.
So much fun.
Yes, this has been it for the Eastern Lariat for 2022. Thank you all for listening. And goodbye.
Sayonara.
Bye-bye.
This is the MLW Radio Network.